Okay! Tokyo!
South America!
Australia!
France!
Germany!
UK!
Africa!
Here we go! Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And so after missing yesterday, it was a lovely day. It was just too nice a day. And we had a lovely time with the grandbabies. And, well, those days don't often come around, so you take advantage of them when you have the opportunity. It's nice to be back and have a Friday on the front porch to look forward to, because this is Friday, the 28th day of June 2019. June will be done by the time we next gather together for More and Monday. And, I'm looking forward to the conversation tonight just to see what everybody's thinking is about last night's pageant. But before we get into that, there are thanks that are due, because this program always begins with thanks. Thanks yesterday to Robert in Australia, subscribers. Thanks to Jules. Thank you today to Charlene in Rogues Island. And thank you to Philip. Thank you to Sharon. And thanks to Randy in PA. Those are our subscribers for the 27th and 28th days of the month. No subscribers tomorrow and Sunday because of the way that, just the way that PayPal handles subscriptions because of February. So there's that. And then there are also thanks to be sent out to the folks over on the Patreon side of things. Patreon. We've got Patreon set up for people who can't stand PayPal. Makes things a little bit easier, or at least I hope it does. And they keep messing with their interface, so it makes it harder and harder to find the list. But our Patreon group is an integral part of keeping the program on the air as well. And so, consequently, I usually wait until the end of the month when there's not, when we're like the 29th or the 30th, when we don't have any PayPal subscribers to thank. But the 29th and the 30th will fall on Saturday and Sunday, so thank you very kindly to Aaron. Thank you, Aaron, very much indeed. Aaron in Maryland. Thank you to Albert in North Carolina. Thank you to Alec. Thank you to Alex in Kentucky. Thank you to Andrea in California. Andy the Angry Jew, thank you very kindly. Thank you to Annette in Massachusetts. Thanks to Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you to Barb in Minnesota. Thank you to Barbara in PA. Thanks to Brendan. Thanks very kindly to David. And to Eric in Pennsylvania, Bamistan. Yes. Thanks to Irwin. And thanks to Foam Cups. Thanks to Frank. And thanks to Fab. Thanks to Glenn. Thank you very kindly to Greg. And an entirely different Greg in North Dakota. Thanks to Hamilton in Texas. Thanks to Jeremy in Vermont. Thanks to Jim in California. Thanks to Joanne. Thank you, Joanne, very kindly. Thank you to Joey. Thank you to John in Maryland. Thank you to an entirely different John. Thank you to Johannes in Colorado. Thank you to John in Wisconsin. And to Joyce. Thank you to Joyce and Karen in California. Thank you to Carl in Texas. Thank you to Kat in Ohio. Thank you to Kimberly in North Carolina. To Lori, thank you, in California. Peg in the Sandbox, thank you very kindly. Thank you to Mark. And thank you to Marty. Thank you very kindly to Matthew in Northern California. Thank you to Michael. To Nick in Ohio. Thank you to Patrick in Germany. Thanks to Ron in Delaware. Thank you to Rhonda in Virginia. To Robin. Thank you to Rocky. Thank you very kindly to Ruth in Ohio. To Scott in Wisconsin. Thank you very kindly to Stephen in Wisconsin. Thank you to Susan in Massachusetts. Thanks to Terrace in California. Thanks to TJ in California. Thank you to Thomas. Thank you to Hung Like Jesus. And thank you to Vernon in San Diego. Thank you all, one and all, most kindly. Because it's how we keep this all on the air. If you'd like to join in this evening on the Friday on the Front Porch conversation, we will have the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable gathered together in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves. Oh, here in about 50 minutes or so. If you'd like to participate, run over to headon.live. That's where you'll see the link to enter the Skype chat, and away we'll go. Okay? Yeah, apparently White Rose Society, the stream there is not quite with the program yet, according to Jack. Thank you for letting me know, Jack. But things are good at headon.live, and they almost always are. So we've got that going for it. Mm-hmm. We've got a good little group gathered already. And hopefully more as well to wander along. Again, the big deal last night, the pageant, I refused to call it a debate. And in fact, it was probably the most pageanty pageant I have ever witnessed. Complete down, it even sounded like a pageant in terms of how they went to break. Oh, and by the way, just a note. Hopefully this will be the last NBC debate, because if the sun burns out before Chuck Todd is ever allowed to moderate another debate, it will be entirely too soon. Any guy who sits down to a deadly serious interview with the President of the United States and can't even be bothered to ask follow-up questions when the guy is just sitting there lying to him, who won't even try to pin him down. I mean, Jesus, even Chris Wallace over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda makes a passing attempt sometimes to ask a follow-up question. But God Almighty, they went to break, and I kept expecting them to announce the sportswear competition. You know, even the swimwear competition has been eliminated from Miss America, so We didn't have that to worry about. And it just seemed like so much wrestling. Oh, there were a couple of dramatic moments. I thought it was pointed and points to Kamala Harris for laying a trap for Joe Biden, and, well, Joe Biden, just whistling down the trail, managed to walk right into it. She sort of owned the moment when she said, as the only black woman up here, I think I have the right to talk about race, and then proceeded to peel Joe Biden like a damn grape. And Joe, well, this is not, you know, tearing him down or building him up. It's just it is simply the reporting of fact. Joe proved the fact that he really still doesn't understand the problem with his ancient opposition to mandatory busing. When he responded to Kamala Harris and said, well, that, you got bussed because that was a decision made by your school board, your community, your... And she said, and she shot back that sometimes school boards had to be forced into that. And he said that his opposition to busing was busing mandated by the United States Department of Education. I don't know if everybody else heard what I heard, but I heard that ancient and hateful two-word phrase, states' rights. In other words, according to Joe last night, if a community wanted to desegregate its schools by engaging in mandatory busing, and the community chose to do it, that was the community's business. But if other communities chose not to desegregate, to stand in willful violation of Brown versus Board of Education and its jurisprudential progeny, then Joe supported that too, saying that the federal government should not be able to force busing in order to desegregate schools. Is exactly the argument that the nasty old racists with whom he aligned himself were making. Herman Talmadge, James Eastland.
It's a states' rights issue as to whether or not we want to bus our students around. We don't need the federal government in here interfering in our sovereign rights. Our sovereign states' rights.
How does anybody who considers themselves a credible campaign advisor let their candidate go out and endorse states' rights? But I have a feeling we saw something last night. Maybe it won't be, but it sure struck me that way. Remember back during the 2016 Republican debates? And the Republican campaign when Jeb Bush was out on the hustings somewhere and he made some policy statement and then looked at a room that was as silent as a graven image and said, please clap. Remember that? The same thing happened last night, sorta. I guess if it's sorta, it's not really the same thing, but you get the idea. Joe was way down in the trap, when he realized he'd sort of run out of ground with which to respond to Kamala Harris, and he said, my time is up. Sorry. Whatever other moments there were in the pageant last night, that was the moment that was controlled entirely and exclusively by the goddess of irony. A guy who was older than the TV network on which he was appearing said, "My time is up. Sorry." And maybe that's the point. Before the thing had begun, I put over on Facebook that I was warming up for it by watching old ads for cars and stuff from the 1930s and 1940s. I dubbed last night's pageant the Octogenarian Octagon. Two stumble in. One stumbles out. Yeah. There are reports today that his staff, Biden's staff, are kind of freaking out. And they probably should be. He went to Chicago today, Joe did. Because, who schedules things this way? It almost feels deliberate. He went to speak to Jesse Jackson's organization in Chicago and complained that 60 seconds was not enough time in which to explain the nuances of his long commitment to civil rights, as long as it didn't include busing. Oh, I added that part. Like I said, felt a little contrived. A lot of people had, especially over on the right-wing side of things, had a lot of fun at the expense of Marianne Williamson. In particular, I guess perennial victim Meghan McCain on The View today thought Marianne was just a real hoot. As is usually the case for Meghan McCain on The View, didn't work out particularly well for her. Yeah, none of those cheers are ever for Meghan McCain.
Thank you, everybody. I think we're celebrating Pride Month still, yeah?
There's a gentleman with a Pride flag and an Arizona flag.
Come
on. Oh, there's a lot of you. Are you wonderful? Arizona!
Thank you. I love it. Did everybody watch the Democratic debates last night? Yeah. Not everybody?
Pageant.
It was the second night of Democratic debates that were held in Miami last night, and the conventional wisdom this morning is that one candidate owned the evening. Yeah. Guess who? Take a look.
Yeah, there's the Kamala Harris part. We're all quite familiar with that by now. Let's see if we can find the Meghan McCain wedges her foot in with her her other foot in with her first foot in her mouth part.
Not to use a boxing reference, but everybody's got a plan until you get hit in the jaw. So Mike Tyson says, and I'm sorry, there's a lot of boxing metaphors that really work in politics. I said that this was going to be a lot more like Pacquiao Mayweather than the debate before. And I'm sorry, Julian Castro, nothing he did in any way compared to what a bunch of people did last night on that stage. I was also, more than anything, freaking Bernie Sanders and Gillibrand were horrible. Marianne Williamson was hitting me with so much crazy. I loved every second of it on every level. I have to. I was laughing so much last night. We have to show the montage.
My first call is to Prime Minister of New Zealand, who said that her goal is to make New Zealand the place where it's the best place in the world for a child to grow up. And I will tell her, girlfriend, you are so wrong, because the United States of America is going to be the best place in the world for a child to grow up. So,
boy, that sure is crazy, isn't it? Woo-hoo! Oh, lock her up. Get the butterfly net.
saying that you want to make the United States a safe place, for the safest place in the world for kids to grow up. That's just nutty. I can understand how Meghan McCain could find that to be so zany.
Mr. President, if you're listening, I want you to hear me, please. You have harnessed fear for political purposes, and only love can cast that out. So I, sir, I have a feeling you know what you're doing. I'm going to harness love.
I found so much entertainment in it. Maybe you guys are classier than I am, but I had people over watching, and I was like, I don't know if she's like a murder mystery actress or what's happening, but I loved it.
Yeah, the power of love. That's just... And by the way, just in case you're wondering, Meghan McCain claims to be a Christian. You know, if I have not love, I am as sounding brass. I mentioned that the other night. It's, the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians? Rich Corinthian leather in the new 1977 Chrysler Cordoba. It tasks me, and I shall have it. Yeah, because it's funny when people talk about love. And oddly enough, Meghan McCain appeared not to have anything to say about the fact that Marianne Williamson, for whatever else may be said, she was right. And she was espousing, whether she is or not, the principles that Meghan McCain is supposed to adhere to. But ha, ha, ha. Yeah, right. That's a real knee slapper.
I was embarrassed for her. In a sense.
I didn't see it there.
I was embarrassed. I was actually watching it with my husband and my son. My daughter's away at sleepaway camp, and my son says, he's 16, he's like, what are the qualifications for running for president? And I said, well, listen, you know, you have to be a certain age, but other than that, you can run for president. And I said, but just because you can doesn't mean that you should.
Oddly enough, they're saying that about a woman who's espousing some sort of, you know, peace and love sort of, the word I kept seeing all day long was hippie principles. Maybe the hippies were right. Well, I mean, until they became, you know, hedge fund traders and shit like that and gave up on that all that peace and love crap and decided to, you know, go ahead and get rich. But how is it that just because you can run for president doesn't mean you should somehow evades comparison to the present occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, who is piling up felonies behind him, and violations of federal law, and failures to uphold and enforce and support and protect and defend the Constitution of the United States faster than, you get the idea. Yeah, Steve in New York. So Jesus was a hippie? Absolutely. Never seen the pictures? Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, nobody should run for president who talks about peace and love, because obviously the president of the United States is not in the peace and love business. We're in the bomb brown people business. We're in the prop up the hydrocarbon industry until we make the planet uninhabitable for the human species. I mean, that's what you want out of a president, isn't it, ladies?
Against so many seasoned, amazing politicians and sitting senators and former prosecutors.
But she's so, you know what? She's no crazier than Trump, who thinks the wind turbine.
Oh, no. Au contraire. She thinks that radiation, that you can combat radiation. Oh, my God. I had it. I retweeted it. You can, the power of your mind is greater than the power of nuclear radiation. And I said, good thing she wasn't in charge of the Chernobyl incident.
Well, okay.
You know how I feel about it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'll notice how precious Meghan, a professional victim, cut off Joy Behar as she was saying that she's no nuttier than Donald Trump, who thinks that wind turbines cause cancer. Or, for that matter, Donald Trump, who joked in Osaka, Japan today, international dateline and all of that, maybe it was yesterday by now, not sure,
He's probably not sure either. But sat and had a haw-haw-haw yuck fest with a guy who has journalists murdered, namely huggable, snuggable, cuddleable Vlad Pootypoot, about how funny, the United States has a fake news problem, according to Trump, but Russia doesn't. And Vlad Pootypoot said, no, it's we have to, with the unstated subtext, until they get thrown out the window. It's called defenestration. Da.
That's crazier than Trump.
No, it's not.
I'm not amused, I don't think it's funny because she's taking up this, like, valuable space. And
that
this
is true.
So
not for
serious.
Long. Not for long.
That's, you know,
true.
This is, I mean, we have got to get rid of Trump.
I didn't put her on the stage. I'm just reacting.
I'm just saying. You'll notice the two people complaining about Marianne Williamson are both fucking Republicans. Okay, Megan will go to great lengths when she's not trying to pogo stick up onto the cross to defend Trump. She's obviously crazier than Trump. Okay, well, the other voice you heard was Anna Navarro, who is a never-Trump Republican, who, as soon as a Democrat gets into the White House, please let that be January 20th, 2021, as soon as a Democrat gets into the White House, she will be back to talking about Republican family values and conservatism and how we can't afford for people to go to the doctor when they're sick. Yeah. I suppose so. Yeah, those never-Trump Republicans, I am not seduced by the idea of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. And the for-profit media were all awash in never-Trump Republicans blathering on about how Democrats need to go about the business of choosing their candidate, not the never-Trump Republicans' candidate. Hey, never-Trump Republicans, why don't y'all get in there and run a primary campaign against that mentally ill, serial, sexual assault, rape, sexual abuse committer? Why don't y'all do that? Yeah, that'd be real cool. Only, of course, you know, they won't. But I think, and I guess we're so inured to having everything in this country rendered a matter of the profit motive that everybody just expected the pageant to be driven by profit. Here's a crazy, wacky, zany idea. I'll just kick this out there to anybody else, any other multimillionaire for-profit media outlet that's going to host a debate. No commercials, please. The life or death discussions that we are having about the fate of the Republic are far more important, CNN, CBS, PBS, than your need to garner in money, to pull it closer to you. Here is just a little idea. If you want to sponsor a debate, if you want to help fund a debate, do so anonymously. Or do so with a crawl underneath that's this debate brought to you by Amalgamated Widget, widgeting the world since 1932, whenever it was Joe Biden was born. But don't sully these discussions if we are to be expected to take them seriously, if we are to be expected to understand them as critical debates over the res publica, the public thing, from which we get our word republic. If these are as grave as you say they are, don't interrupt them to sell me a better way to flip my house. Or, given the fact that these networks make money hand over fist, and I know the fairness doctrine is dead and buried by the ancient hand of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. But you're filthy rich. You don't even need a tax cut. You know, if you needed a tax break in order to do this, it really does sort of mean that you don't care that much about the fate of the republic. But seriously, put these things together and do it out of your own pocket and do it without trying to recoup the cost through ad sales. For once in your lives, members of the for-profit media, tell all those Herb Tarlicks in your marketing department to fuck off for a little bit and just be a participant in the civic well-being of this country. Do something pro bono publico, pro bono res publico, for the good of the republic. Try that. You might even find out it makes you feel kind of, well, good. I know. Why do I bother? Because these organizations don't give a good goddamn about the public good or the fate of the republic. They care about how much money they can make. I don't call them the for-profit media for nothing. It's sort of like the thing with Wayfair. Wayfair, you want to make sure that little kids in concentration camps all over America have a decent bed to sleep on at night? Groovy. Give them away. Give the beds away. You'll get a tax write-off for it. If you were really sincerely interested in the well-being of the country, you wouldn't even take the tax write-off. Give it away. Yeah. Yeah, when Anna Navarro, the never Trump Republican, accused Marianne Williamson of taking up valuable space, Stephen New York says, "Are you fucking kidding me? The presence of the goddess of irony, peace be upon her, was palpable last night." Oh, and by the way, Appalachia continued to go begging. One of the largest single geographic regions of the United States. And it's like we don't exist. But then again, I guess we kind of don't. Scott in San Diego, what's the big deal about Marianne Williamson getting onto the debate stage? She apparently met the polling and fundraising criteria the Democratic Party set up to qualify to participate. I guess a lot of folks just agree with her campaign slogan, a lump of tofu in every pot and a healing crystal-studded electric scooter in every garage. You know, I for one think we need a little dose of that kind of thinking once in a while, just to remind us that that kind of thinking still exists. And if she's into the race for the Democratic nomination, if she gets in, bows out, what have you, far better than having her over there amongst the green meanies running a third-party candidacy. I guess, maybe Meghan McCain laughs merrily whenever she hears John Lennon singing Imagine. Go figure. Because to hear those folks, there's no place in America for love, for peace, for beating swords into plowshares. Yeah, that's just crazy. As David in South Carolina Stan points out, she, Marianne, whatever you say, is less ridiculous than Donald Trump. She's also less dangerous. You know what she meant when she said that the power of love was greater than the power of nuclear radiation? She meant that in a world where love comes first, you dramatically lessen the risk of nuclear war. Yeah, I know, more of that crazy talk. I mean, how are you supposed to love the Iranians? I mean, Jesus. And as Steve in New York notes, some awesome good news. The U.S. women's soccer team beat France's women's soccer team 2-1. And now, if only women got the recognition they deserved as being genuine, bona fide badasses. Well, the American women's soccer team appears to be one, setting up a semifinal match with Mary Oldie, Engeland. And serving up the perfect counterpoint to having the nitwit Nero mansplain to her about how she needed to stand
up and salute the flag. Don't kneel.
Maybe she needs to take that trip to the White House and spit on him. You know, like the waitress did in Chicago with Butthead. By the way, the mayor of Chicago issued a statement today about Butthead getting spat upon. She said at a news conference today that the incident in which a member of the wait staff spat on Butthead, you know, Eric Trump, Mayor Lori Lightfoot of Chicago said that it was repugnant, and you cross the line when you assault someone. No one deserves that. No one. Huh. No one? Not even the people who help enable concentration camps full of little children? Might be fun to kind of ask Mayor Lori Lightfoot of Chicago if it would have been okay to maybe, oh, I don't know, spit on Heinrich Himmler or Hermann Göring. And by the way, that's not a violation of Godwin's law, because the guy who came up with Godwin's law said, go crazy. Do not consider yourself violating Godwin's law by comparing these sick bastards, I'm paraphrasing, these sick bastards in the Trump administration to Nazis, because the comparison is both fair and valid. Mayor Lori Lightfoot of Chicago went on to say that Butthead was very gracious because he didn't press charges against the server when the server spit on him. This all happened at a restaurant in Chicago Tuesday evening, a restaurant called The Aviary. Meanwhile, Butthead, and now it turned into a real kerfuffle. Chicago police got called. the Secret Service involved themselves over a little bit of spittle. Meanwhile, Pogo sticking up onto the cross himself, Butthead went crying to Breitbart, and said it was purely a disgusting act by somebody who clearly has emotional problems for a party that preaches tolerance. Now, to this, he doesn't know how she's registered. Maybe that waitress, that waitstaff member of the server, maybe she was a never-Trump Republican like Anna Navarro. For a party that preaches tolerance, this once again demonstrates they have very little civility. When somebody's sick enough to resort to spitting on someone, it just emphasizes a sickness and desperation and the fact that we're winning. Yeah, winning on the backs of little children face down in the Rio Grande River there, Butthead. Yeah, you're winning. Yeah, that being spat upon, that's some terrible shit. That's what that is. I mean, that's a lot worse than having infants in shitty diapers being cared for by 8-year-olds. Yeah, that's lots of, yeah. Oh, but they're winning. So is spitting on somebody, I mean, he didn't press charges. What would the charges have been? Assault with a deadly weapon? No. Don't think. Monique says, wouldn't the Secret Service be in charge of arresting the person? Nah, they'd take the person down, but is it a federal crime to spit on the privileged, spoiled, walking fecalith son of the president? Yeah, but. Well, I don't know why Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot felt the burning urge to chime in, but she did, because it is always the job of Democrats to apologize, even if the mayor of Chicago had to apologize, even though the mayor of Chicago had absolutely nothing in it. Was there anything in her remarks about maybe if you didn't do such hateful shit that made people want to? No, no. Of course not. Of course not. Because just silly. I mean, that is just silly, isn't it? To expect people to not... support putting babies in cages. Yeah. That's a general overview let's add one more to this. Kamala Harris did an interview with CBS News. And so what does the multimillionaire for-profit media CBS News ask Kamala Harris in the wake of her attempt to intervene as the only black woman in a discussion about race on a debate stage? Yeah. They asked her if challenging Joe Biden on his busing record was, and this is a quote, a low blow. Because that's what Biden's camp had said. It was a low blow. That's kind of interesting. Because, well, the problem is there's a record. Let's go back to those heady days of yore, 1977. Maybe check in with Joe Biden in his own words.
We keep talking about this thing as being North versus South. That's not the issue. It is rural versus urban. And most of the busing that's taken place to date has taken place in rural areas, whether it's be administratively ordered or court ordered. Now we're moving into applying the same standards to urban areas. And it is a standard that doesn't make sense. It doesn't apply. It doesn't hold. We're moving from trying to, in urban areas, we've had integrated facilities but segregated neighborhoods. And in rural areas, we've traditionally had integrated neighborhoods but segregated facilities. And they've applied the same standard and the same test. So this North-South thing is not really the issue. As Professor Nathan Glaser at Harvard has indicated, as Dr. Armour of the RAND Corporation, as James Coleman, as I just held 3 days of hearing, two days of hearings in the Judiciary Committee on another bill I have beyond this that deals with busing. And there is uniform opinion of those who testified that it is not a North-South, it's an urban-rural question, a distinction.
But no matter what your intent, there are going to be those who say it's a segregated thing, it's a question of race, and that you have set back the movement of desegregation of schools. How would you answer that?
The way I answer that is I predict that the young black leadership of America will overwhelmingly decide with me. I predict that in 1980 and 84, my position will be totally vindicated by the sociologist and by the civil rights advocate. You know, I come from that side of the track. That's where I'm from. I was a defense lawyer. I handled civil rights cases. I sat in on Route 40. I mean, I'm not from the other side of this. And I happen to think that the one way to ensure that you set the civil rights movement in America further back is to continue to push busing, because it's a bankrupt policy. And that's why I think I'll be vindicated. I don't include myself with pro or anti-busing forces. I think the only group that can determine whether or not a constitutional violation exists are the federal courts of the United States of America. No one else has that right. Secondly, a federal court of the United States of America determining a violation of the Constitution with regard to school desegregation cases must find that there is a specific intent to segregate before they can order busing. That I abide by, that I legislate by, that I hold by. And they're the standards we should repair to.
Hell of a standard, that. You have to find that there's a specific intent to segregate. So as long as nobody says the quiet part out loud, and we're doing this to keep our schools nice and white, that's why we're doing it, then under the standard that Biden's talking about there, everything was cool. But the idea that the I mean, these are his own words. And I don't consider this an attack on Joe Biden. I consider this merely a matter of putting forward the facts as they exist. This is archival footage from ABC News. This hasn't been edited. This hasn't been cut up. But guess what? That business about being vindicated? He wasn't. We now have almost as much, if not more, segregation in our school systems across the country than we did in the era of Brown versus Board of Education. It's just that they're quietly segregated instead of having Herman Talmadge's and George Wallace's and James Eastland's screaming the quiet part loud. Oh, and Jesus Christ, then there's Chris Matthews. This is our hockey puck moment for the evening. Take it away, Chris Matthews. No, really, get the hockey puck.
Lawrence, your town had a history with this topic.
I'm stunned that I'm sitting here tonight and I'm hearing Joe Biden in his interview with Garrett Haake talk about de jure segregation, he yeah. referred to. Well, this is a history lesson that I'm amazed we have to go back to. In the 1970s, when Joe Biden was working on this issue, there were two kinds of segregation that were constantly being talked about. De facto segregation, which was Boston, where I was a kid, and where they had a busing program that was one of the most controversial in the country. That was because of de facto. And what Joe Biden was just saying, if you were to follow the detail of it, was, in effect, he was opposed to the busing order in Boston because it was based on de facto education, and he was segregation. He was only in favor of the de jure, but even that is not actually what his position was. And if this continues to go into a detailed analysis of what his busing position was in the 1970s, it's going to get worse and worse for Joe Biden, because he did hang on to an anti-busing position long after most Democrats gave up, including a Southern Democrat from North Carolina who said, I'm opposed to busing. I didn't want it, but it's working. It's been working for the last few years, and Joe Biden was trying to stop it even then in 1978. And one of his biggest opponents in the Senate at the time was the only black senator in the Senate who was a Republican from Massachusetts, Ed Brooke, whose capital city was in the throes of this. And so the story for Joe Biden on busing is actually a more durable controversy than the one about the way he talked about the segregationist senators in the fundraiser. And there's a part of...
I think the most important part of what Lawrence O'Donnell is saying there is the idea that it's only going to get worse, this issue for Joe Biden. But that's not the hockey puck part. Oh, no.
It's Matthews. Chris?
Thank you. I've got Senator Kamala Harris here for an amazing night in history, I thought, tonight. And I want to ask you about, I think you had to be there was the message I think Biden was trying to use to explain his behavior with the segregation of senators. But you were there with regard to busing. And you talked tonight in that debate about the hurt you felt when you heard him talking about his civil, in fact, to some extent, praising the civility of these old seggies. What was the hurt?
You know, I mean, listen, if those men, those segregationists, had had their way, I would not be a member of the United States Senate. And I certainly would not be a serious candidate for president of the United States. And so the harm that they did and that they attempted to do, because frankly, they built their, not only their careers, but their reputation off of that, which is their quest to ensure the segregation of the races. Had they their way, there's so much that would not have happened. Lester Holt would not have been asking questions on that stage. Barack Obama would not have been in the position to appoint Joe Biden vice president of the United States. So the consequences of their actions were very real and on the shoulders of a history in our country of really a very bad, awful, dark, dangerous, and
all true
time. So, but I have to tell you, Chris, I otherwise have a great deal of respect for Joe Biden. I do not believe he's a racist, but his perspective on those senators was something that was hurtful. And it had consequences.
In the picture tonight, we saw you turn to him, look him in the eye, and almost in the way that a prosecutor has to point a finger at a defendant, and said, you did these things. It was very dramatic.
Well, I mean, I felt that. I felt that. Going back to when I was a young girl, I mean, everything I said on that stage is sure. is the truth. I grew up where the kid next door said she couldn't play with us anymore because we were black. What I said about...
You feel that still? Do you feel that memory?
Of course I do. It's the memory of a child who felt pain. I mean, I have gotten beyond it, but I didn't let it cripple me. But it is a real emotion that a child feels based on a fact that these issues are real in our country, and we have to speak truth about it. And so that's what I was attempting to do, is speak the truth. And in a way that is also about hopefully conveying that The consequences are not only about what is wrong morally and legally with a perspective that is about segregation, as an example, but the consequences are also very painful emotionally. There was a young woman who came up to me after the debate, and she said, I'm glad that you brought that up because I was also bussed, and it was also hurtful for me to hear those comments. So...
This is really important to people of all backgrounds and ethnicities. I don't like the word race, ethnicities.
Right.
How did you come out of that and not have hatred towards white people generally?
Well,
I'm just asking because you talked about it.
Did you hear the noise that she made? It wasn't even a word. How did you not hate all the white? How did you not come out of that hating whitey? This is what happens when the desperate desire to come up with a zinger clip because it's all about the money you can make overrides the need for a serious discussion of issues affecting the republic. Jesus jumping Christ. How did you not? When you turn off the light, does Chris Matthews' white privilege just make him glow in the dark? Damn. Just damn. And, you know, I tell you what, let's go over to the the folks gathered around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves and get some thoughts on all of this, because there's further denouement to all of this, but let's check in and see, you know, see who's hanging out. And by the way, if you can't get in through the Skype link, if you can't use Skype for some reason, you're more than welcome to use the stress line, 844-843-4676, and that will get you into the conversation. But for now, over to the old holler tree. It's my Sparky, are you already gone? I'm assuming so. Sparky had to take... his lovely wife to the doctor this afternoon. Let's check it. Steve. It's from Georgistan. You there?
Bob, what's going on, man?
What do you know?
You. Man.
Let me tinker. Maybe tomorrow I'll get that new wire or whatever. But yeah, go ahead, man.
Am I breaking up?
It's on my end, believe me, trust me.
Could be my end, too. You know?
No, it really can't be. No. There's a short and a wire that needs to be replaced, and if I fiddle with it enough, all will be good.
But I, like you, I'm kind of concerned about Joe. I mean, I've seen mental illness and due to aging, and I really get the feeling that he may be slipping, Bob, and I hate to say that. It saddens me to say that, because I know a lot of people really like and support him, and I could vote for him if I had to, but last night it looked like the lights were there, but nobody was home. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, and
that was Beto.
Well, but the thing is, It's just that he's culturally clueless from another time, it feels like. And again, I'll say it. If I have to say it, you know, from now till November the 3rd, 2020, I will. If he's the nominee, I'll vote for him.
Oh, I'll campaign for him.
But
77 years old.
But I earnestly am convinced that
it's tough, man.
Well, no, I'm just I've got the same bad feeling about his candidacy that I had about Hillary's.
Amen.
Yep.
Now, Hillary got beaten by a number of factors. Hillary got beaten by James Comey, Russian interference, and the operation of an anachronistic constitutional mechanism from our filthy slavery past, namely the Electoral College. Hey, by the way, there's a question that wasn't on the debate stage. It wasn't just, you know, we go, climate change, okay, next question. Yeah, there was that. But how come nobody is getting asked the question, is it time to ditch the Electoral College?
Duh.
Yeah, that's duh to you and duh to me.
Yeah, that, I mean, it's archaic. It is.
I would say a yes, Bob.
Uncle John.
Brother, brother John, good to hear from you, brother.
Hey, John.
How y'all doing?
Where the hell you been?
I'm staying busy as hell, I'm telling you. Fighting the good fight, baby. That's all we got to do. That's what all of us are doing here. That's why all of us are here. Because we're involved in this fight.
Well, Bob, circle back to me sometime tonight. I think I've found something out about Washington General that I'd like to share with Todd. Hopefully he's listening in.
Okay, and let me do this real quick. Somebody jumped in on the stress line. Hey, who have I got?
It's Jim Bob.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Jim Bob. Fine, how are you?
Good to hear from you.
It's been a while.
It has been a little bit. Are you continuing your recovery?
Oh, yeah. Good, best I can.
Well, that's all anybody can ask.
Pretty good.
Good, 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 good. Did you watch the pageant last night?
No, I didn't. Tell you the truth, I started to, and I just said I don't want to see this, and I'm just not involved in it. You know, the only person up there who appeals to me with any degree is Beto O'Rourke. Tell you the truth.
And he was on the night before.
Yeah, this was not last night, but you know, he's always appealed to me. I've always thought a lot of him, and so I don't know. I'm just not political these days. I'll vote as I always have, and so I've just been too. I've sort of been overtaken by events here in my own life, you know.
I know. Life's what happens to you when you make other plans.
That's it. So right now I'm watching Queer as Folk on Showtime, and I want to say this. Now, Showtime is advertising a special on that cur, Mr. Fair and Balanced, Roger Ailes.
Dear God, they've made a program about Roger Ailes.
Wait, starring Russell Crowe.
Movie, yeah.
It looks just like him.
Really? Chris?
What an asshole.
You said it shows some potential, Chris?
It does. I saw the previews, and it looks like it's going to be really good.
Yep. Hate to agree with you.
Well, I mean, you don't hate to agree with Chris, but yeah, I just can't imagine spending money.
The miniseries appears to be based on Gabriel so-and-so's book a few years ago, The Loudest Voice in the Room, hence the name of the series, The Loudest Voice. And the book was awfully good, so. And Russell Crowe is unrecognizable due to the prosthetics and the makeup. It's incredible. He was on the other night with Colbert, and I forget how long he said the makeup sessions were before filming began each day, but it was like a horrendously long time to be in the chair getting done up as old fat boy Ailes. But anyway.
Well, that's almost a guarantee for an Emmy then, because anytime you put an actor in a lot of makeup, that gets the awards people all tingly.
You have to see it, Bob. It's incredible.
Who's the character you always reference, the Baron from Dune? That's who he looks like.
Oh, Harkonnen?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Fitting image. Yeah, it's great.
Scott, if you like swimming in the dark, The Handmaid's Tale, keeps getting better. I don't know how they do it, because it's done past the book. But in my opinion, it just keeps getting... It's more captivating, more darker. I don't know.
Well,
it's probably
not
what you need right now, you know. But if you want a good watch, it's worth a watch.
I'm one who is up for just about anything worth watching on TV. The trouble is I don't have Hulu, And until my budget turns around a little bit, I'm not going to be able to order the DVDs. Because I love Elizabeth Moss, who was Peggy Olson on Mad Men. So, I mean, anything that she's in has got to be, has got to have some quality to it, I would think.
Yeah, I do find it interesting that, you know, especially given the content and the theme of The Handmaid's Tale, I find it interesting that she's a Scientologist.
You know, that disappointed me when I found that out a few years ago. Because from what I know of Scientology, there was a series, a two-part movie, not movie, but series on HBO a year ago or so about Scientology. And you've got to get up pretty goddamn early in the morning to be more batshit crazy than a Scientologist in terms of what they believe. I mean,
but then again, that's the nature of the acting profession. I guess your religion, if you're really a good actor, your religion doesn't come into it, nor should your politics. There was a time when that one crazy bastard, James Woods, there was a time when he was a fantastic actor.
Oh, yeah.
But then he decided he wanted to be an internet troll instead. So, cool. Yeah, good for you.
Let's see. I'm looking across the living room here at 7 or 8 packs of DVDs, the series Mad Men. Now, you got to figure, as a major player on the program, as an actor, Elizabeth Moss got some slice of the income generated by my purchase of all the Mad Men episodes. And I'm sure that Scientology has their version of tithing and giving and shit. So I don't like thinking that some portion of my consumer dollar went to enrich L. Ron Hubbard's organization. But I like the show too goddamn much not to have this show at my fingertips. Anytime I wake up out of a stupor, I can fire up the DVD machine and watch the show, you know? So I'm stuck in a quandary, Bob. Help me out.
Hey, Scott, I can help you. They don't need your money. They have plenty of money. It's called tax exemption.
Oh, yeah, well,
because they're a religion. And it's all tax-free.
Hallelujah.
Well, it's no wonder she always looks pissed off then.
Hey, speaking of churches, guys.
She always looks pissed off.
I went to church last night.
Jim Priest.
Yeah, downtown L.A. It was led by a priest, a high mass, Judas. Oh, man. Those guys kick ass. It was definitely not the Cathedral of Common Sense. Lots of headbangers were there, let's just say. But I'd never seen them before, and he has a voice, the lead singer for Judas Priest, has a voice as...
Breaking the law.
Yeah, with the range of a Ronnie Dio in terms of how high he can go and how long he can hold it.
Rob Halford's a trained opera singer, Rick.
Oh, is he? Okay. Yeah. His name is Rob Halford?
Rob Halford, yeah. If that's the one that's been with him forever, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. But it was fun. It was a good time. I was downtown at the...
Yeah, he's got a set of pipes, there's no question.
Theater.
Hey, and this is for both you and Tracy, because you're both L.A. folks. I've been engaged in a reread of Raymond Chandler because that's my escape. You know, Scott watches stuff on TV. Scott knows everything that's on. I read old books, and I've been doing a reread of Raymond Chandler just because I find, among other things, one, they're great yarns, and two, I find that his description of 1930s into 1940s to 1950s L.A. is just terribly, terribly engaging.
And, oh, it is. I mean, yeah.
I mean, he makes reference to real places.
Right.
And
it's almost like film noir, but in a book form, you know?
Well, Bob? I mean, that's where, turning Raymond Chandler books into movies was a big part of why we wound up with film noir.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, it's like, I mean, do you watch Bosch, Bob?
No, I haven't.
Well, Bosch is pretty much like a modern Raymond Chandler novel. Because I mean, do you watch it, Rick?
Yeah, I have watched it. I watched like the first season or two. I haven't watched it lately, but it's very cinematic.
It's dead on, because you know, I know my streets of L.A. I did have a pet peeve the last season because they were talking about they were going down a street, and Jan and I are watching it because, you know, Jan's in the industry as well.
Uh-huh.
And we're watching, and they're saying they were going down the street. I'm like, no, they're not. They're not going down that street that direction. And she's looking, and she's like, yep, nope, they're not. I mean, because, and that was the first, and that was the first time in, because I think this past season, that just aired, I think it might have been the fourth or fifth season, actually. And that's the first time that they got a detail wrong. And I'm like, I'm not nitpicky. Well, slightly I am when it comes to certain things.
Where you're local, what do you expect, right?
Right. And it's like, it was like, and I was shocked because they're so, you know, they're so dead on about places and like restaurants. There's been a couple of times that, you know, restaurants that I've actually thought about going to, that unfortunately when I was going to go, I Googled the places, and since the show aired, they were since have been closed, which sucked, because the food looked really good, but it's like, yeah. No, so yeah, if you want to transport, you know, if you want to get a good taste of, you know, 21st century, you know, 2019 LA, but definitely, because you have Amazon Prime, yes?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, check out Bosch. It's worth your viewing.
I mean, how do you spell it?
Bosch.
C-H.
C-H.
Have I steered you wrong?
Like Hieronymus.
No, never have.
Hieronymus Bosch. Hieronymus Bosch.
His name is Hieronymus in the show, yes. Which is interesting.
There's a whole. As a matter of fact, there's a season. One of the seasons is about his name being Hieronymus.
Right.
And you know, so it's such a. And the guy, I can't think of his name. Twilliger. Whatever, I can't think of his name.
I think you're close to it. Carl Twilliger or something.
Like that. He is such an amazing actor. Amazing character actor.
Yeah.
And if you've ever seen him in anything else, I mean, he was on, years back, he had a major arc on The Sons of Anarchy, where he played, if memory serves, because like I said, I have the memory and the recall of a special needs gnat.
Oh,
that's
a cowbell, I think.
I do believe.
But he played an IRA, a guy from, you know, Ireland that was in the IRA, and he was a gun runner or something like that. And he was fucking brilliant and chillingly scary. Oh, and there was a cowbell that you should have got earlier, Bob.
Yes.
What did you call Eric Trump? Fecal? What did you call
a walking fecalith.
Yes. Motherfucker. Yes! Goddamn! That should have been a cowbell for
you. You go, Bob.
Well, thank you.
I'm just amazed. I'm amazed that they can pilot that high, you know?
Well, but see, what happened when you get all backed up, okay?
Yes!
Stop, Bob, stop telling us how to get backed up.
And you get so, and you get so bad.
There goes dinner.
Yeah, let's see. That would be dinner in the Central Time Zone. But when you get so backed up that it doesn't clear, it literally turns to like stone inside you.
Yep.
And so
would that be a stalactite or
no? It's a fecalith. It's a poop rock.
Oh God!
Fossil
fuel.
Milk of magnesia works wonderfully, man.
Sounds like my cats, guys.
There's not enough water or milk of magnesia to clear that shit out, right?
Has anyone seen our cuts or Cartoon President on Showtime? I think it's produced by Stephen Colbert. It is absolutely hysterical, and I think the best character is Butthead Eric. It's terrific. There's one scene where Daddy Trump was supposed to give him a bath, and he's sitting in the bathtub waiting, and everybody forgot about him, and then they go back. And Donnie Jr. like, oh, Eric, your nuts are so shriveled up. Oh.
What was that called, Chris? Beavis and Butthead?
What's that?
No.
What was that called?
Our cartoon president.
Yeah.
Oh, cartoon president. Okay.
It's great. They've got the whole cabinet there. They've got Nancy and Chuck are in it. Yeah, it's great. Highly recommend that.
Like our own president, except a little more intelligent.
Yeah, exactly, John.
So I've got another recommendation for anybody who has Stars, and it's only if you like, you know, a great show. And it's a show about L.A. It's about East L.A. It's about two Hispanic sisters who are estranged and actually go back to East L.A. because their brother has passed away, and they had to deal with, you know, this and that and this and that, and it's. The second season just ended last Sunday, and it's called Vita, and it's a great show. And you know, just you know, viewer discretion advised. Only if you have a problem with, you know, hot lesbian sex, then don't watch it.
Well, in that case, I better watch it, Tracy.
I'll force myself.
I know, you guys. I know you're forced. I know it's hard, but aside from
that. Hard? Say it was hard? Cowbell.
Yeah.
Cowbell.
Yeah, you're right about that.
Don't flirt with the goddess of irony that way, Tracy. Don't do it.
I know that. God damn it. I didn't mean to do that shit. But in any event, it is an amazing show. It talks about gentrification, talks about, you know, just, you know, being a person who is educated, and you have to go back to your old neighborhood, and they feel as though that you think you're better than them, and you know what you have to. It's an amazing show, and each episode is 30 minutes, and after the episode is over, you're sitting there going, no, it can't be over. And this is one of the things that drives me crazy. You know, everybody in this room is of a certain age, and we're used to, you know, the television season starting in, you know, the fall and ending in the summer, and a few months break in between, and then it starts up again. And this in between, this year, or sometimes 2 years in between seasons, is bullshit. It drives me crazy, because now the season just ended for Vita, and now you got to wait until next year, you know, before the new season starts. Who came up with that shit? By the way,
well, anybody? Tracy, anybody? I can answer that. I can answer it for you. Now, most of these series on cable run anywhere from 8 to 13 episodes per season. Is that pretty much right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That sounds like that, yeah.
All right. The amount of work that has to go into writing those episodes and producing and acting in those episodes, I mean, it's incredible. I began to appreciate this when I was listening to the DVD commentary on Breaking Bad and Mad Men.
Or ask Mr. Fisher, he'll tell you.
Well, and the better the show is in terms of quality and well-donedness, if that's a word.
Did you say well-donedness?
Yeah,
yes, well-donedness. I think you invented a word.
That adds to the timeline.
You got the best word, Scott.
Well, thank you. There's probably a ratio. In other words, for 1 minute of the screen of viewing, what does that work out to in terms of all-in production time? Everything from writing to makeup to costumes to set building to whatever. And that shit is hard, man. You know? You talk about, what was that
hours.
Word, fecal what?
Bob, fecalith. Fecalith.
Well, it's even harder than that.
I don't even
that.
Like the sounds of that. Jesus.
Yeah. It sounds painful. It sounds like if you're suffering for something like that, you might as well just go in for abdominal surgery or something, because it doesn't sound like anything.
And back, boys, I think it's going
to
blow.
Bring your dinner, too.
I think I'm going to call in sick on Monday with that, Bob. Yeah, I'm going to call in sick on Monday.
And it, tell them you're spending the day trying to alleviate it with your shiny hiney.
There you go. There it goes. There it goes. There. Oh, look at there. That, got it running the in
shot.
There.
That's the money shot.
I heard that shit.
I've got a question for John, if I may. What in the hell happened to your guy Beto the other night?
He took it on the chin. I'm not gonna say that. Y'all know I love the guy. He's fantastic and all that. But
John, were you and him out baking before he went on? Come on.
Well, was I what?
Was you and him out baking before?
He looked like he was a little slow on the start there.
Am I the only person, John, who was troubled by a couple of these candidates having Hispanic Tourette's out of nowhere? I mean, just out of fucking nowhere.
Once it started, everybody had to jump in that knew how. They're not going to be upended. I watched both debates. As a matter of fact, we had a first on my show last night. Due to a technological advancement here in the studio, we were able to go live last night with the debate on the show. And then during the commercials, we had a Discord channel going on where we could all talk and whatnot. But it went real well, better than I expected. A new addition to the show of how we can do things.
It's always nice when the magic works.
Oh, yes. I thought, move over, Wolf Blitzer. Shit, I got breaking news, too. I can go live. Shit, yeah, I can show you the same thing that's on any TV anywhere. We could pull it up and put it on the screen and be able to talk about it.
You're better looking, John.
Thank you, baby. I'm working every day on it. I'm working every day. It's hard to be humble when you're, perfect and everything. I've been singing to my wife that Willie Nelson song. Y'all know that one.
Oh, yes.
Yes. There you go. We're just tickled to death that we had such great participation last night during the debate. So, yeah. And what a debate last night was.
Yeah, John, I'm still sticking with the word pageant.
Yeah, well, it is. We got, too many. We got 10 people up on that stage. It's hard for any, especially if you're not putting your foot out there, baby, you're not getting your message out. And it was very rough on some. It's going to have to thin out. Beto O'Rourke did not, perform as I would have liked to have seen him. But again, Beto is, everybody knows me, knows my opinion of him. But I really do wish he would have gone for Senate here in Texas.
Did he debate... Did Beto debate Ted Cruz when he was running against him for Senate?
I don't think so. They
didn't have a debate, John?
I don't recall one. Of course, there's just...
Ted would have lost.
Yeah, I would have thought so. But, Beto had such a big move here in Texas. He came within just points. And for Texas, that's a big thing. So he had that backing. He had that name recognition here in Texas. He had it all, baby.
I wish he just took on Cornyn. I think he took too big of it out of the apple, man.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Because he almost got Ted Cruz.
Well, but realistically, John, isn't there at least a 50% chance that, like a couple of other folks on that stage or those stages, they're running for vice president?
I believe Beto is going to be somebody's pick for vice president. I've said that before. Biden Beto, it could be Bernie Beto, Warren Beto, it could be that combination, because Beto does bring
Kamala Beto.
Yeah,
because sure. because say whatever else about last night, I think a lot of people came away with the idea that if Kamala Harris and I know the burners are out there, Kamala's a cop. There are issues related to that, that still remain unanswered. And there, I remember playing a clip a couple of months back, where she was asked specifically about the prison slave labor question.
Right.
And she dodged it. And it's a serious question. And just like Joe Biden with busing, sooner or later, she's going to have to deal with it.
Biden, you're out.
Your
history.
Just to finish for a second, Chris. I came away from last night with a feeling of certitude that if she was on a debate stage by herself with Nitwit Nero, that she could slap him every time he opened his filthy gob.
Every time. I think so.
And there's no way in hell
she would let him scoff.
She stood up. I had a little thing going. I'm going to put a little asterisk. Every time I think one of those candidates last night stepped up, you know what I mean? Stepped into it, took the lead. And, I've got Bernie Sanders got a couple. Biden got a couple. Christine Gillibrand got one. Pete Buttigieg got a few. And there's Camilla. I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 asterisks there. 7 times that I thought she stepped up and projected that.
Biden did not impress me last night.
No.
As a guy who could be alone on the stage with Donald Trump and slap him and make him like it.
No. Camilla seems like more of a person that is going to get in his face and call it what it is. And Biden's going to try to be in the middle of the road, let's make a deal type guy.
You know what, guys? So Obama had a couple of bumps in his road, right? He had the Tony Resco affair that he kind of addressed, but the big one, of course, was Reverend Wright, right?
Right.
He came out with that speech that kind of cleared all that away. You know,
God damn America.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he had to kind of cover for that. You know, that was starting to hurt him.
Yeah.
And
it was a powerful speech.
It was a very powerful speech. And I think, you know what, Bob? You're right. Kamala's got to come up with something like that to counteract and clear that away.
There's a couple other points out of both of the pageants. I thought Elizabeth Warren was very good.
Yes.
But I also, as much as I like her, and I do, I mean, she's not kidding. When she says, I've got a plan for that, no matter what the issue that gets brought up, she's already got a plan. Yep. She's ready. Yeah, she's done her homework.
That's the big thing that impresses me about her.
But she is going to get, she'll get Pocahontas all over the stage. Donald Trump may come out on stage with a goddamn feather in his hair. Okay?
The plans on the world, but if you don't motivate, if you don't inspire your followers, and that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for somebody who is going to be commander in chief, who is going to take charge. That's what we want in this. We want somebody to step up and push this agenda forward, our agenda.
And the other thing that we have to remember is that 2016 versus 2012, and 2008, the stay-home factor had as much to do with Donald Trump becoming president probably as anything else.
Yeah. I'm sorry that there are people out there
who feel like they have to be as excited about a presidential election as they are about the season cliffhanger of what the fuck ever, but there are people like that out there. And the stay homes were a pain in the ass, and a big part of why we wound up where we are. So you've got to have somebody as a nominee who can obviate that stay home. And
I think we stand a better chance this time because I think a lot more people, because of the way things are going and the way the shit storm happens every day, are getting more and more motivated that this will not stand. And I believe we'll have a larger turnout.
A lot of people are seeing with their very own eyes 24/7 what the results of staying at home in 16 leaves us with. But two examples to keep in mind in terms of trying to put too much of a judgment on who did well on the last two nights of the Democratic first time out debates. It's not generally remembered, but in October of 62, when Johnny Carson took over the Tonight Show, he was not an immediate success. It took him a good year before the eyes of the public to really find his groove, so to speak. And a lot of people don't realize that Seinfeld did not do well out of the gate. It took them a good season or so to catch on as a TV show.
Are we going to have 13 episodes to I don't think so.
No, it won't be that. It won't be that prolonged.
But I'll just say this
season left.
And I'm going to ask Tracy to kind of either agree or disagree. If we put, sorry, Tracy, you're on the spot. It's your job.
Am I speaking for all black people? Yes. Or black women? Which one am I doing?
Well, no, I think we're going to do all black people.
Okay.
And Lady B, I've had, by the way, I had a note from Lady B talking about Tracy and Rick are right about shooting on location. Black Klansman wasn't filmed in the Springs, Colorado Springs. Obviously, you can't recreate stuff that happened 40 years ago accurately, especially considering the Springs was half its current size back then. Still, it's kind of odd when he enters into a police station that looks nothing like what it used to. I should know, my sister worked for Colorado Springs PD and the El Paso County Sheriff's Office for 25 years. So, just to sort of background on that. Lady B, you're welcome to jump in. Monique's welcome to jump in. Everybody's welcome to jump in. That's what conversation radio is about. But I'm going to go ahead and say this and possibly get myself in horrible, horrible trouble. If the Democrats put a lily white ticket together, you're going to have the same stay home, the ho-hum stay home factor that you had in 2016. I just believe that. I don't know. I don't, you know, forgive me if I'm suspicious about that, because I keep hearing, well, you know, the older black, and Tracy and I talked about this a few nights ago. Oh, the older black community in South Carolina and around the, you know, their support of Joe Biden doesn't seem to be wavering. Really?
Well, that's not suspicious. That's being pragmatic.
But Tracy, am I wrong?
I mean,
if this smells like stereotyping, I'm asking the question because I don't want to sit here and be a clueless white guy.
Well, see, here's the question, and here's the, because, you know, like I said, November 2016, I held my nose and I went to the polling places, and I voted, but a lot of black people said I can't with Hillary, because the older black people that I know that I talk to, they're not voting for Joe Biden. I mean, they're just like, no. And if they put it, I mean, it's just, I can't even think of.
But the question you raised is, how old do you have to be older black people?
Right, because I'm going to be 53 next month. So I'm at auntie stage. I'm auntie Tracy. I'm not, you know, grandma Tracy yet. But so I don't know.
You could be.
And
at the rate my son is going, I'm never going to be a grandmother.
Well, one of the most dangerous things we could do. One of the most dangerous things we could do at this stage of the game is to buy into the notion of the inevitability of Biden or anybody else at this point, really.
Why does the media keep pushing him on?
Because they like coronations, Steve.
Corporate.
I mean, it's just been going on since the inception of this thing.
Hey, Steve.
Steve, it's the best horse. I think it, right, Steve? Don't you think? It's the best horse race. It makes for the best horse race. Old,
I suppose,
guy versus orange, you know, old orange white guy.
Also,
even that shit is what got you Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Hey.
You know, you look at Biden. And here's Biden talking about reaching across the aisle. Are you fucking kidding me, Biden? Dude, hey, if you reach across the aisle, I want you to punch Mitch McConnell right in the face. Sleepy Joe, how about Traitor Joe? I don't trust him. He'll just be another corporate hack. He'll sign a bunch of bills like Bill Clinton did that'll, you know, favor the rich. And maybe.
Joe, look where he's from, Delaware. That financial.
Yeah, the credit card.
That's more
Sure. Oh, I've never forgiven him for what he did to the credit card industry about 20, I don't know,
did for
years
it,
ago.
Not to it, but yeah.
Well, to us. Bankruptcy Reform Act.
To us, yeah. I mean, yeah, minimum payments triple. I've never forgiven his ass for that, man.
Yeah,
and the college kids can't, bullshit.
You can't claim bankruptcy and they can come after you. I mean... But,
Was the credit card interest deduction when it got yanked away? Where did Joe? I wonder how he voted. Was he? In
I don't know. That was in the 80s during the Reagan.
Well, that was Reagan.
That was the 86 tax reform act. That was
yeah. Well, he backed
the savings and loan disaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think what you're talking about is depicted in the Frontline episode from about 12 years ago, the yep. secret history of credit cards or credit, uh-huh. secret history of credit.
Yeah.
Very well done.
Oh, I want to see that, Scott.
Nobody looks at where their credit card payments go anymore because everybody pays anything online. But if you look at it, where you write your check to, if you were still to do it that way, it goes right to his district. So that's why he backed them.
Yep. Well, either Delaware or South Dakota. Look at the return address.
Yep.
That's where all your credit cards...
I'm saying 70%
Delaware. That's where the loopholes are.
Scott... And he screwed us, and I will never forgive his ass for that.
Well, we may not be able to. He's got a lot of shit in his wagon.
But if I have clear,
if he is the man that comes out of the Democratic convention, I'm rooting for him.
I'll wear my ass. Old pin, yeah.
That's it. That's the deal here. He did not excite me. I am really not convinced on who I'm on fire for right now. I really like Kamala Harris's attitude last night and her performance, but
John, what do you think about Julian Castro or Julian Castro?
I really don't think he's got a chance.
That's the guy that's going to give us $1,000.
No, that's Andrew Yang.
I'm waiting for the 999 guy. The Democrats and the version of Herman Cain.
I'm ready for my $1,000 check.
One of those that I think ought to be bowing out and getting off the stage and letting, because it impressed me. He's from San Antonio, Texas. He's right up the road from me and all that stuff. But so is Beto. He's a Texas boy. I'm not letting the state politics influence my, this is our country. I want somebody up there. I'm at that point now where, I don't want to play nice. We have to take the White House. We have to take the Senate. Anything less than that is futile. And I want to be able to be in a position to start shoving our progressive agenda up their ass, just like they have shoved their shit up our ass forever.
We need to engage in strategy, John. We got to send the herd too, Scott.
For years, this tax cut that they got, they brag about all the time. Oh, look here, we got a tax cut. Look what that has done. Look at what the debt is now.
Another thing to consider is, how the Republicans operate, okay? And it only gets worse with each new election cycle. You've got to think in terms of opposition research. What are they going to throw at whoever the nominee is?
They're going to throw the kitchen sink at whoever it is.
And you want the strongest, you want the person who's in the strongest position. I mean, that's one of the factors that you've got to consider. If somebody has a long record of not compiling shit that can be thrown at them later, that works in our favor.
Yeah.
And God, I shudder to
throw.
I shudder to think. Oh God, because the longer you're on the national stage, the more time you have to build up a boxcar full of shit for the opposition to throw at you.
Well, that's how come we're real good at providing that. Democrats are real good at providing all that information and all that shit because we're trying to sit out here and...
Can I say something here?
Sure. I'm sorry, Bob.
Go ahead, Steve.
Wow, John, is your...
I'm used to being on my...
No,
I think you're both wrong.
Well, good.
You're both wrong.
What's the deal?
The reason you're wrong is, here's the deal. What you're saying, first of all, look at the record that Donald Trump had. If ever there was it was ripe for opposition research, Donald Trump had it all. Here's the deal. What that smacks of is letting the Republicans determine who our nominee is.
Exactly.
Do you think they let us determine who their nominee is? No. This bullshit about being all pussyfooted about worrying what skeletons we have in the closet. Forget that.
Yeah, we're beyond that because
Steve, I like your point. That's a good point.
We, but, we, but, We need to quit letting them determine who our candidate is. We determine our candidate, Scott. They're doing it again.
You're forgetting that there are two different standards. The way they play the game, there are no rules. There is no
rules. And you know what, Scott?
I
don't care. Then you know what? You know whose fault that is? That's our fault. But guys, weren't we dancing?
Guys, weren't we dancing in the streets as Donald was slaying, Jebbers and all the Republican 19 Christie and
oh, I don't remember dancing in the streets over that. I remember being kind of stunned that none of them knew how to handle him.
Yeah, Bob, you were dancing naked in the studio.
At the last
that's right. Oh, I think that's a cowbell, Joe. That's what
I think Bob, what was happening with Bob was for seeing what was forecoming. I mean, like I
well, we I all kind of predicted it. Everybody in the know.
Most of you guys did not.
I kind of did. So did Bob. Yeah. I can clearly remember saying.
Hold on, Steve. Let the point get made.
Okay.
The point that like what he was just saying about people were dancing in the streets because Donald Trump is a boob. He's a moron. Hillary's going to mop the floor with him. He doesn't stand a chance against Hillary.
She's the most qualified ever.
I was one of them dancing.
I'm sorry. I don't usually.
No. Go, Tracy.
But here's the thing. What people felt and people who overlooked this shit. And there was a few people, Michael Moore, Bob, and a whole bunch of black folks, saw what was happening. Because, see, you didn't count on the fact that how racist this motherfucking country is. And that people were feeding, he was feeding the frenzy of this so-called disenfranchised white people. Fuck that shit. And economic anxiety. Fuck that shit, too. But, black people have been dealing with this shit since the beginning of time. And so all these little white people were like, oh, yes, he's the bomb to solve our ills and our pain. Here's the second coming of Jesus. He's called Donald fucking Trump. And black people and Bob and a whole lot of other people sat back and like, it's coming. Y'all ain't listening. Y'all ain't paying attention. You think this man is an idiot, and which he is. But he's the right kind of idiot. The only difference between him and the other idiot that's coming, the other one that's coming behind him, is the one that's coming after him is going to know what the fuck he's doing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The people that voted for Trump were the ones that were enticed by and already in the camp of the teabaggers, the hatred that Obama had to suffer through his presidency, and all of that built from that. Donald Trump came in and capitalized that. I don't think he did it so much as the Russians helped him with that.
They spread that shit
all over the internet, and they sponsored that damn discussion, and they transferred the hate that they had for Obama, transferred it right onto Hillary, baby, locked her up with everything that Obama ever stood for them, and he capitalized on it. So, yes, that is leftover racism that brought Donald Trump into that White House.
On the whole thing with the Russian bots on the black community were doing stay home from the Hillary Clinton is this
anything
Clinton
to further that conflict between the races that was the part of the Russian operation,
the Russian agenda,
and they capitalized on that because they could see the value in the Tea Party. They saw the hatred. All the signs, the witch doctor signs, the Kenya signs, all that bullshit.
Bone in the nose.
That's it. They capitalized on it. They saw a big market there. And that Donnie's little birther thing fell right into that and fed it even more. Fox News, Rush, Limp Dick, all of them got all in that shit and fed that red meat to those people. And that rose up enough.
Uncle John, there was another segment who were bean counters that looked at the logistics and looked at the odds and said, yes, this is possible.
brace all yourself, support, because this can happen.
With the Russians and told them exactly what was fucking that, states they had to go attack. And that's what they did.
Bob, I don't know if this is gimmick infringement, but at the risk of engaging in gimmick infringement, all of what you're saying, I get, Tracy and John and the others. But what we must never forget that 2016 was decided on the basis of 77,000 votes in three states.
That's what I'm saying. They were targeted. They knew exactly what McGrath they were going after.
Yeah. And we cannot allow that to happen again, and we cannot enable the other side internationally or domestically. We cannot hand them another win.
And that we starts right here. To. Everybody,
Scott, we keep getting fucked over and over and over again. I mean, this latest gerrymander decision, we're fucked in perpetuity, you know?
Don't we have to continue on that.
And I've got a constitutional question for Rick, you know, the lawyer.
Well, I'm listening here.
Do you have any training in constitutional law or?
Yeah. You want to talk about that gerrymandering decision?
Well, no, I want to talk about what Bernie said last night that really caught my ear. He said we can rotate these SCOTUS judges out and in and out with other judges. Is that true?
No.
I didn't think so.
You need a constitutional amendment. No. They're basically appointed for life subject to good behavior.
What
which
I thought.
That, unless they engage in a high crime or misdemeanor.
Yeah, I was caught off guard by that last night, too.
I don't
know
where
he's coming from, because I distinctly heard him say that.
Yep.
Well, you know, I don't think Bernie's a lawyer. So, sometimes non-lawyers
they shoot
make
from
mistakes when they try to
practice law. I don't think we can count on rotating the Supreme Court out.
He actually is a lawyer. He went to the University of Chicago. But,
oh, well, sorry. I'm corrected. I get University of Chicago. Okay, well.
Wait, who is?
Bernie.
Yeah, but he said that, and I'm not going crazy. Everybody else heard it, too.
No, I heard it. I just didn't.
You can't do that.
Yeah.
But, let's.
Rick, so is Bernie's idea making the Supreme Court en banc?
It makes no sense. I mean, there's no way you can rotate out.
The way I understood it, he could rotate them with other.
The only thing we can do is add numbers. We can add numbers and detract numbers.
No. I mean, what does happen sometimes with retired Supreme Court justices is they can occasionally sit on panels, usually appellate court panels. I remember Judge White authored a Ninth Circuit opinion involving timely filing in a tax case. This is like probably, 15, 20 years ago. So, they can, you know, it only goes one way. Supreme Court justices, once they're retired, can still, volunteer to serve on appellate court panels.
So they're there for life. We're stuck with this bunch, pretty much.
Yeah, appellate court judges cannot serve as Supreme Court justices. Right. Even on a temporary basis, just doesn't happen.
Our only hope is to increase the numbers. That's vaguely possible.
Isn't it? I think we should call.
Yeah, you can go up on your numbers, but.
It's varied. I mean, there's nothing that says it has to be nine. It's just a statute that makes it nine. It's not constitutional.
Mitch McConnell showed us that, baby. Mitch McConnell said, "I don't give a shit."
Well, circling back to this gerrymandering thing, this is going to haunt all of us for the rest of our lives.
Well, what we got to do is focus on the states, unlike what we've been doing for the last 20 or 30 years, and take control in the states instead of always trying to gain control of the top office and then, doing a top-down kind of a dictate. We need to go from the bottom up, but we also have to win the presidency as well.
And
it's
we can't,
not, folks. It's
just,
not just Donnie.
Folks,
we
can
have
we
to do
genuinely
folks,
bend
Senate.
Over? I mean, to let that Anton Scalia seat stay open for a year?
Can we just kind of let people talk instead of yelling over each other? I hate to be the prude or the.
Well, I thought I heard someone trying to speak, and it.
It's Steve. You got the floor, man.
No, I was just saying, if we can all be a little more patient in letting other people talk instead of trying to talk over each other.
Well, we're all very passionate. This is
the essence of good conversation is to let someone finish an idea. Because if we're responding to unfinished ideas, we're not responding to whatever it is that, yeah, you get my point? So everybody breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, we're all guilty, so Steve's right. Not pointing his fingers.
Yeah, but I thought I heard a female voice in the background, and I wasn't sure if I was hearing someone on some other speaker, Bob, or if it was somebody in the group.
Bob, that was me. I had CNN up on my computer, and I didn't realize it does that autoplay stuff.
I wasn't sure.
I heard it too.
Yeah, that's what it was.
I heard it too.
Can I say something about the gerrymandering?
Yeah.
People aren't going to like me saying this, but I need to read the decision to find out the specific reasoning, but I generally agree with the concept that the court's saying. Is they're saying that the drawing of the districts is up to the political branches. And again, let's also realize that gerrymandering is not something new. This goes back to the beginnings of the Republic. The issue is we need to make sure that we take control of these state houses so we can do what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
I agree with most of what you're saying, Steve, but I disagree with John Roberts' position, because every time something comes along that seems to touch on issues of race, John Roberts finds a way to do the filthy bidding of the Federalist Society. Whether it was the Voting Rights Act or now because in the North Carolina case, the North Carolina GOP said, well, hell, of course we gerrymandered it to keep the black folks from having any political power. What the hell's the sense in having any power if you can't keep black folks from voting?
And that's why the Supreme Court should have ruled in that.
And in instances such as that, the court exists to right those wrongs.
I can weigh in, too, as well, guys.
The gerrymandering decision of the Supreme Court is a definite strike to the democracy.
It's a cheap cop-out.
I don't agree.
Well, Steve, let me have a little debate with you here. My understanding is that Judge Roberts' rationale for saying that, you know, the courts have no business weighing in on gerrymandering cases is that it's a political question up to a different branch of the government. However, there also is in the Supreme Court jurisprudence, the idea of one person, one vote. And by gerrymandering for any, you know, based on any kind of, criteria, you know, if you're going to basically jigger the North Carolina map, so let's say that, you know, 50.3% of the people in the state vote Republican, and yet, you know, of the congressional seats, 10 out of 15 are Republican or something like that, maybe 10 out of 14, whatever it is. I mean, it kind of destroys the idea of one person, one vote. Exactly. If you allow for partisan gerrymandering or racial gerrymandering or, you know, come up with any other, inappropriate classification to try and have the politicians choose the voters as opposed to the
it
voters.
It tries to nullify the individual vote.
Yeah.
Here's the problem in Ohio. You know, first of all, Rick, I stand corrected. He went to the University of Chicago, but he does not have an advanced degree. So Sanders is not a lawyer. But out here in Ohio, you know, 51% of the people voted for Republicans, but we have 75% representation. So yes. I maintain what we should do here is whatever the percentage is what you get. In other words, the aggrieved party here would have been the Democrats who lost, who should have had the if you get 51% out of 16, Republicans should have 9 seats and Democrats should have approximately 7. So I maintain what should happen is the aggrieved party should get to take 3 seats back, and they should also get to pick which 3 seats come back, which 3 seats they want. And all this crap would stop right away. You would see gerrymandering end overnight if the aggrieved party got to take away 3 seats or 5 seats, whatever the hell it is, like in North Carolina, same thing. You know. So that would
end up in the courts as well, Joe. Rick, that's the problem.
Rick, let me ask you a question.
Sure.
I can tell you've been listening to Randy Rhodes, by the way.
No, because she made the thing about one man, one vote. I completely disagreed with her.
I actually didn't listen to her that episode, but that's my thought anyway.
I am completely on board with what the court did. I'm sorry I am, because I look at it as something left to the political branches. And if you want to change how they're drawn, you do one of two things. You get the legislature in those states, you change it how you want, or if you want it to be objective going forward, what you do is you either have a commission to draw the districts, or you can do it electronically, statistically, and just basically do it like a grid.
Yeah. Algorithms. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in a gerrymandered state.
Yeah.
I'm in a gerrymandered state, and I'm in a gerrymandered district. This state, Texas, is
commission in California.
I don't think there's a problem.
Yeah, it works fine.
I don't think there's a problem with gerrymandering in general. I don't have a problem with it.
Well, I do. I call gerrymandering just another way to politically stab this country in the back. The democracy, the idea that that we all have a say in our government. You gerrymander the shit, which my district is. I live on the coast, baby. Half my district's up there by Austin. Hey, people, I ain't got nothing to do with my ass down here. Texas, big-ass state.
And the way you
gerrymandered that, because no matter how we vote, there are more Republican votes in this district than anything else. So I don't give a shit how many Democrats you throw down here. It's hard as hell to get one elected. And as long as Texas is held in the House, in the Texas House by Republicans, then they continue to draw the map. So it's continuous political hit job on democracy itself, on the right to vote, on the right to determine, by popular vote.
And Uncle John, it may be apples and oranges, but they damn sure didn't mind weighing in on Citizens United.
Oh, shit, no. Baby, this is what I'm saying. This is a fight. And we have to quit pussyfooting around with shit. Yes, gerrymandering is wrong on either
and
side.
I'm saying that out of respect to my friends.
And, Steve. I mean, just let me jump in for a moment here. Because I understand the point that Steve is making, but when we were all having our cup of coffee in law school, and some of us sat through a tedious class called either remedies or equity or something like that, there's a maxim out there that says equity will not permit a wrong without a remedy. It doesn't have to be the best remedy, but it's got to be some kind of remedy. And equity is, equity is the is within the jurisdiction of the court system, not the legislature. And so the problem I see with your analysis, Steve, respectfully, is that to say, well, you got to get the legislature. Well, when you've dummied up the legislature. When you've dummied up the means whereby you select your legislature to make sure that only one political party can ever have power, then the possibility of remedying the problem through the legislature becomes an act of absurdity. So that you can't do the very thing that you're suggesting is the actual remedy, Steve.
I understand, but I just look at this as purely a political question, and that it is a what happens when people are lazy, they don't vote, and you get the government that you vote for or don't vote for.
Well, a lot of cases in the state.
I respect that, but by that gerrymandering. A continuing a cycle of elections, time after time, that you go vote, that you get that motivation to go vote, and every time you see, because of the fact that you're in a gerrymandered district, that your vote is no good, you're not getting anywhere, you're just beating your head up against the wall. After a while, those people do have a tendency to say, "What the hell? What's the point?" And that
I can't fight
is what
City Hall. Forget it.
That's it. And we have to get out of that. We can fight City Hall.
Folks, and that's the idea.
Let's
that's
be honest
in
here.
Wisconsin, North Carolina, Ohio.
There's certain things that the Supreme Court should weigh on, and it's not across
the lines here to think that, you know, of things that have happened in our history, that people said that this has to be left up to the states.
And Uncle John's Citizens United and Bush v. Gore wasn't politically motivated. Come on, give me a fucking break, man.
I say it all the time. The Republican Party is a party of liars, cheats, and thieves. They will do anything they can to keep the power. They don't give a shit about your vote. They will try to block it. They'll try to change the rules. They'll gerrymander the shit out of everything. That's what that party has become. Now, I'm not saying I'm the greatest guy in the world, but Jesus, at some point, we have to stand up as citizens and say, no, this is not right. We have to remain in power. We, the people, have to remain in power. And we do that with our voice, our vote, and everything else that we talk about. But and we have to continue to try to motivate those that don't vote to get off their ass, to get out there. And we're seeing, I believe, because of a lot of things, especially that inspired the youth, the Parkland shooting, the climate change issue. These are things that are motivating the youth, and I'm inspired to see more of them involved, which gives me hope for this election in 2020, that this country stands up and takes control back. And I don't give a shit if it's a Republican or Democrat. If they're not doing the people's business, throw their ass out. Get them replaced by somebody who progressed this country. I ain't got no George Jetson car yet. Hell, we don't even have high-speed rail.
Don't we? We still don't have the helium-filled pants. Jump in. I just want to make sure we get to the folks on the stress line. Go ahead.
Very quick. All I want to say is 15, maybe 20 years ago, didn't the Supreme Court have probably about an 80-85% approval rating? What do you think it's at now? I think it's headed straight down to where Congress is. Don't you think? Does it even have a 40%?
Yeah, because they're a gang of political hacks.
That's what it's being perceived as.
The dissent in the gerrymandering case that was filed by Elena Kagan was both seething and blistering. It was ferocious. Okay. But again, this is par for, you know, John Roberts is an institutionalist until he gets a chance to stick it to black people. Okay. Ron in Raleigh said Republicans will hold power forever because they have algorithms that can pick their voters down to each house on the block. 54% voted Democratic in Wisconsin, and they have 36% of the seats in the legislature. Do some fucking math and tell me what percentage of the vote would Democrats need to win to get a majority of seats. It's almost impossible to overcome, that kind of a scam. It's not a flaw, it's a goddamn feature for Republicans. And I think we failed to take that into account at our peril. Now, let me run over to the stress line and see who we got. I think we got a couple of people over there. Jump in, y'all. Who is it?
It's me, Bob. We were disconnected.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jim. Is there anybody else there with you? I don't mean with you at your house.
No.
I thought
we're all coming over, Jim.
Okay, party's at Jim's house.
I thought I had multiple calls on the same line here.
My cat's here.
Jim, don't give us a blow by blow, okay?
Bob?
Well, hold on.
Bob?
Okay.
Stand by just a second. I got a question here. From Lady B. Here's a question for the group. How in the hell did our Cold War enemies know that playing the race card would be one thing to help take us down? I know the rest of the world doesn't think like Americans do, but do most Americans? Was it really that easy, y'all? Are we so fucking cluelessly divided we couldn't keep our shit together enough to fight off our enemies, both foreign and domestic? Well, you got to remember, if we go back in history, it is not a lie to say that a certain short little former colonel with a Charlie Chaplin mustache took some of his notions on genocide from how we treated the indigenous people of this country. It's just a fact. And by the way, Mighty Mouse says, "Hi, group. We could rotate out Thomas and Kavanaugh for lying to Congress if we can get control of both houses and a president who will reappoint Garland and another. You know, just a dream." And at this point, I don't even want Merrick Garland. I want what the Republicans are doing, only with people who aren't crazy racist, homophobic bigots and xenophobes.
There you go.
I want a 33-year-old genius, or several of them, who are going to be on the court for another 60 years.
A liberal lion.
I want a junior third.
I want to play the game they've been playing. Remember, Mitch McConnell's book is called The Long Game.
Exactly, Uncle John. We should have never let him
the long
get,
game, baby.
We should have never let him get away with what he did. No. You know,
and is still doing. Scalia.
Respond to.
We should have never let him get away with that. I mean, that was bullshit.
It was.
And we're going to be
a slap in the face. It was a finger in the face of every American in this country.
We should have been in Kentucky and D.C. All citizens should have been there just raising hell, man.
And he's still throwing that finger right in your face today.
Yep.
I'm telling you, with the bills that he said that he's standing on right on the Senate floor and will not allow to be introduced into the Senate, he is on the team of Team Russia, baby. That's exactly where Mitch McConnell is.
He is a total
rolling.
Well, that Russian money Russian funneled money. Through the NRA right. spends real good,
you,
John.
You bet you it does, Bob. It's just...
Well,
you know,
get it,
and I've got a note...
getting back to what Lady B was Bob? Asking...
I'm trying to share as much content as I possibly can. I got a note from Darlene in Connecticut, going back to Kamala Harris. The thing I like about Kamala is that she's becoming a better and better candidate. She's great as the prosecutor asking the searing questions. She roasted Bagpipe Barr into a stuttering silence, don't forget, illustrating that he was no match for her. But she had a shaky start being in the hot seat herself with impromptu questions and interviews. But I knew there'd be a quick learning curve for her, and she'd get better at being in the hot seat as time went on. She ruled last night and commanded that debate. This shows her potential for being a great president, where you kind of have to learn on the job. I'll even go so far as to say I've forgiven her, somewhat, for the Al Franken debacle, as I see Gillibrand as the primary instigator there. Okay, so we have that. All right, next up, jump in. If you haven't been heard from in particular.
Well, I was the one who tried to jump in, Bob.
Okay, Jim, what? Go.
No, I just want to say this. I heard John Brennero, and I've always endorsed John, and I've always supported him. I always feel like he has an awful lot to bring to the table. And he is, by far, for me, carries a lot of weight on this program.
I appreciate
it. He really does. My action as well as word. And I want to say this. I said I was non-political. That's not really the case and such. But I vote by absentee because I have to, and I get on the phone, and I've supported all the Democrats ever since Al Gore. And I'm looking at a side picture he sent me thanking me for my support. So, yes, I'm very much involved. But it's just the whole thing, this panoply of these people yelling and screaming at each other. It's going to have to be willed out.
Well, and that'll probably come. Now, there's another debate next month, another pageant next month. But the rules change in September, and theoretically the stage will not have nearly as many people on it. But, you know, even if Jim, I agree to a certain extent. Even if you've got 10 people on the stage, that's still too many. I mean, I'm all for choices, but there aren't... look, John Delaney has essentially the same message as Joe Biden. I don't know what Kirsten Gillibrand's message is. I simply don't trust her because of all those years she spent taking all that NRA money and bragging about keeping loaded firearms under her bed in a house that had little children in it. Yeah. If you'll do that for money, you got a credibility problem with me.
Yeah, screw her.
I'm not going to track. I'm just saying these are the things that bother me. Again, as with all of them, if whoever's the nominee is going to get my vote on November 3rd, 2020, period, end of sentence. And I'm not going to go wandering off into the weeds with Jill fucking Stein or
Let's see, Bob.
Guitar,
not even
but.
Know. Nobody.
But there may be 24 or 25 candidates, but there are not 25 unique positions. I wish Jay Inslee had been a little bit more forward, I guess is the word I'm looking for, in the first debate, because he waited to be called on and he raised his hand. And as we saw last night, you get results by saying fuck it and jumping in and start talking.
You have to.
Even you know, even if Joke Toad is over there saying, thank you, we've heard enough, thank you, your time is up. Keep fucking talking.
You have to step up. Look at the job that you're asking to take. I want that leadership. I want somebody to take that stage. But I want them, you know, I want everybody to have their say. The problem is every one of us on this call and everybody listening, we all know people on this list of 20 people that we think should not be there, okay? They're not going to make it or some whatever reason. I try not to make that list myself because we have a lot in our Blue Dot family that support a lot of people. I don't want to discourage anybody from voting for the person they think is it. But I also not shy about telling you who I like.
But, John,
but
let's
encourage
John, let's also remember, when does the Texas primary come around?
Oh, shit. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Well, you're speaking for all
it's
Texans
on one of these
now,
pages,
okay?
Though. It's written down on one of these pages.
It might
probably
be a Super Tuesday state. John. But one of the things that continues to bother me, and one of the things that I was thinking last night as I watched the pageant, is that we are not asking, and I brought this issue up in... Okay. I brought this issue up... I brought this issue up in regard to the Electoral College. We need to be talking about structural, constitutional issues for a 21st and 22nd, and, you know, if humanity is still a going concern, a 23rd century America. So there needs to be a conversation about the Electoral College. We also need a conversation in an electronic world where you don't have to put the goddamn ballots on a buggy and drive them to Washington fucking D.C., about how we conduct the process of nominating a candidate. And I'm sorry, I live in a little pissant state that nobody cares about, made obvious by these last two pageants. Appalachia doesn't even warrant a mention, even the largest aggregated Superfund site. It's one big Superfund site here. But from a structural constitutional standpoint, we need a conversation about how we nominate candidates. If the Republicans want to have coronations, fine. But the fact of the matter is there's a whole bunch of people in this country, I'm one of them, who do not get to choose. You know, John, you said you try not to discourage anybody by making that list of who doesn't belong up there, and I understand you, and I agree with it. But there's a whole lot of people that aren't going to get a choice. They're not going to get to choose one of those 24 people because they don't live in New Hampshire. They don't live in Iowa. They don't live in South Carolina or Nevada. And that's like the first four primaries, aren't they? And I go back to what I have said in the past. Why? Especially with regard to South Carolina, why are we going to continue once again to let a state whose Democrats cannot for love nor money deliver their state for our presidential candidate continue to determine who is viable as a candidate
Iowa
or who is
Steve King
or is the right front runner? Right. Same thing with Iowa. You're going to let a bunch of Democrats in Steve King's district?
I don't understand that shit. It's all about Iowa, New Hampshire. Let's all, if you don't win there, well, you're just out of the, kiss my ass.
You know, we don't vote for the president that way.
No.
People in New Hampshire don't vote on November the 3rd, and people in West Virginia vote 5 months later.
It makes it into a publicity stunt. That's what it makes it into.
Yeah, exactly. Because capitalism, because good for business. We used to need the time to send the ballots on a buggy to Washington D.C.
or send
riders with saddlebags full of ballots to Columbia, South Carolina, to be tallied, or Dubuque, Iowa, or
that's why they said the electoral college.
Or in the
great idea.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, or in the freezing wastes of New Hampshire, you know, getting them down to Manchester, what have you. But that is not the way it is in the 21st century. And I frankly suggest a one-day primary.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
I have very strange, or a lot of people think I have very strange ideas about stuff like this. The first one I'm going to suggest isn't so strange. Let me just say this. I think that if you think about it, the big reason that the primaries, the early primaries, are so determinative is because of money. And I think one way to cure that is to have publicly financed elections. That way, a person who didn't do so well wouldn't have to worry about not being able to fundraise. Number one. Number two, I frankly think we should get rid of primaries. And here's the reason. I have a real problem having my tax dollars go to pay for two private clubs to nominate a candidate for president. And that I think what should happen is you go back to the convention, the convention way of doing it, where you have in each party, you elect delegates and they go to the convention and they vote for their candidate that way. That's a way to remedy this. Now, I understand that the argument against doing that the way it used to be was it was subject to corruption. But I challenge anyone to look me in the face and tell me the way we do it now is any less corrupt. The fundamental issue is I'm sick of why do I have to pay for a private club to nominate its candidate? Why do I have to pay for that?
Well, how are you paying for it, Steve?
My tax dollars. These elections are publicly financed because the government pays to run the primary. They pay for the voting booths. They pay for people to be poll watchers. They pay for all this. It's very expensive. They pay for the voting machines. I'm sick of paying for that, whether it's for the Democrats or the Republicans. These are private clubs who are nominating a person to run in a general election. Why should I pay for that?
Why not? I get part of that, and it dovetails with an argument that I've made in the past, and you know, that's like the idea of letting independents vote in the very... You know, if you're an independent and you're voting in a primary, you're not very independent. Because they are nominating processes. You know, government is involved with them ostensibly for the purpose of keeping them on the square. But what I just said a few minutes ago, though, I think is a viable alternative. One-day primary. Everybody votes on the same day.
Who's going to mandate
that? National primary.
How can you mandate
that?
Congress.
Private club.
Congress. How can you do it for a private club?
By constitutional amendment?
The way that it has evolved over the last 40 years or so is that the primaries and the caucuses basically are individual votes in various regions to decide on some level who we get to vote for in November of 2020, okay? And they arose or evolved out of where we were before they took hold, smoke-filled rooms, you know, where the candidate was handpicked by the forces of business and banking and political honchos. And
yeah, you know one of the best. You know one of the best examples of that, Scott. One of the best examples of that is when the Republicans ditched all of their candidates in Chicago in the late 1800s, and nominated James Garfield instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they didn't have anybody that they could reach a consensus on.
And you know what? It's so much better now. I'm sorry.
I can't tell whether that was sarcastic or meaningful.
No, it's not the least bit sarcastic. I just want someone to tell me why I should pay for a private club to nominate a candidate.
Well, there's lots of things that we pay for that we don't like, Steve. It's like what about our huge military budget, for example?
Yeah, but that's different. That's a public institution. Democratic Party, Republican Party are not. They're not public
institutions. Yeah, but that money ends up getting funneled to all the private contractors.
That's fine. Okay, great. But there's a constitutional. It's still government for a government purpose. How is a private club nominating a candidate the purview of my tax dollars?
Well, the private club thing, you're referring to the two political parties or
any political party.
Right. But those political parties run candidates. Now, you don't have to be a club member to go vote. You don't have to be a registered.
But you should have to be.
Well, maybe so. But that's not a requirement. You know.
Why do I have to pay for it?
But we all pay for. Why do we have to pay for a police department or a fire?
That's different. That's different. Those are not private clubs.
Well, then how would you suggest that we go through the nominating process? How do we get the candidates and
primaries?
Yeah,
like California.
Get rid of primaries.
You just all jump out there.
Get rid of primaries. Let each state.
Last time we had nominate
delegates to a convention and go vote there. That's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is the government's going to pay for them to have an election. You have a convention, and you have each state privately nominate people to go to their convention to vote for their private candidate. Why should I pay for that?
Well,
they're not subject to the First Amendment. They're not subject to the Constitution. Why should I pay for that?
So, Steve, what's your remedy? Is it something like
just
voting?
I've just said what my remedy is. Each state says, okay, each state has to privately elect delegates. They go to a state convention. They vote on who they want their delegates to go to the national convention to be, and that's where they choose their candidate for their private
club. Who's going to pay for all that?
Who's going to pay for that, though? Right,
John. They pay for it. The parties pay for it.
Somebody's got to pay for it. Well, they have
there's a flaw here. Because if the private parties are going to pay for it, then you're gonna have to pony up bucks to be in the party. I've been a Democrat all my life, and I've never been assessed a single damn dime for being a Democrat.
You don't have to. That's not the case, Bob.
It's going to decrease participation.
Yeah, and like we have such high participation now. I mean, everyone's talking, you know, like the thing with the gerrymandering, how that's caused people to not vote. BS. Tell me a time in this country when there's ever been decent turnout.
Well, the lack of participation
never.
In this country.
Never.
Yeah.
Well, we
even on the best of days.
Obama, 55, 60%?
When your district looks like a lizard, you
put your hands up and say, "Well, why the hell go? Why go do anything? Because you know the voter turnout won't be there." So we
John,
you know, what's the point?
John, yeah. It's never been high.
Yeah,
okay.
I wouldn't call that high, Steve.
I agree with you. There has been a minority of our country that has made the decisions in this country,
and for a very long time that was, for a very long time that was by design. Please remember that we're talking about an evolving institution that began with the idea that if you were not a white man of 21 years of age or older who also happened to own real property, you didn't vote.
And where the Senate of the United States was concerned,
you didn't vote at all. You were either selected by the legislature or you were selected by the governor. The trend, no matter the fact that apparently we're not very good at it, the trend is toward trying to encourage greater participation. You know, going all the way back to the later years of James Madison, when he was saying, when he himself, the author of the Constitution, said, "Boy, we got that one wrong. We got to get more people into the electoral process, or this country is going to fail."
And you know what, Bob? There's no evidence. There is no evidence that was a sincere thought, because and maybe I'm wrong here, and the reason I say that is because if that were really the case, you said it was Hamilton who said that?
No, it was Madison.
Madison.
If he really thought that, then at what point was Madison saying, therefore, we need to get rid of the Electoral College?
Well, at that point, the Electoral
College. Madison hated the Madison hated the Electoral College from jump, but signed on to it. As a pragmatic means of getting the Constitution ratified. By the time Andrew Jackson, who himself was a vicious slaver, came along, Andrew Jackson was the first president to say the Electoral College has got to go.
And here we are.
And just think, if he had been taken at if he had been taken at his word, and it had been dealt with back then, no George W. Bush, and no Donald Trump.
Brother Bob, explain to everybody why we vote on Tuesdays. That'll clarify a lot of this nonsense right now.
I just wish someone would try to answer my question about why I should pay for a private club.
Well, because it is our society. Government is formed. If you take your idea, and I don't want to be, you know, everybody has their opinion. But if you take the responsibility and give it to a private club to hold an election, or hold the primary, or whatever, you invite people in, they come vote, your club pays for that. You can switch that vote any way you want. You're a private club, you can do that. I do not want my
voting.
They
can do that now.
Well, the shortest answer to your question, Steve, is because we tried it your way, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
And it's so much better now.
It's better than what the other way was.
I don't agree.
Yeah.
I don't understand what the alternative would be to not having government control, meaning your state, your local government. When you go to vote, those machines that you vote on are bought by your district or your county or something. The people there to watch the polls to make sure that nobody's in there screwing with anybody or not breaking the law to come in there and campaign right there.
We vote on Tuesdays because that allowed farmers plenty of time to get to the polls.
Yeah, so that's true. I remember reading that. Yeah.
If
you want to move this thing forward, the voting day should be a national
holiday.
Day off to go exercise. The problem that we have in this country, and I don't have it here because I live way out in the country and vote at a little fire station down here that nobody goes to, but I see it on TV where I see people lined up around the damn block to go vote. You're under pressure, baby. If you got a job, you got to get in there and vote. You don't get that done, well, shit, you got to get back to work. Has to stop. It's just
Tuesday
a way to
get about the shit.
Mail-in ballots.
Mail-in ballots, sure.
There you go. Duncan.
I love it.
Yeah, early voting.
Bob, who was that Republican operative several years ago who popped the balloon, said, you know, the fallacy is that you people think that we want more people to vote. We don't want more people to vote. We want, like, the right people to vote.
Yeah,
Paul Weyrich.
Weyrich, yeah.
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 1979 speech to some church.
But in terms of...
Wait a minute, Bob.
Yeah, okay.
If you made it a holiday, a national federal holiday, voting day, and treated it like a radio remote with clowns and balloons and T-shirts and God knows what other incentive, you still wouldn't get a certain segment of the population to bother to show up because they're not engaged on that level. They either don't care or they don't know combination.
That same argument is the same thing I say about racism. They have cockroaches in this country, and they have them all over the world. Are we ever going to get rid of racism? No, because there's some cockroach out there teaching his little cockroach son or daughter those same cockroach ways. Are we? You know, it's going to be a battle forever to get that out of the world. So it's not an easy battle. It's the same thing with the democracy that we fight for. Everything is wrong. We have to fix. Are we ever going to make it perfect? Hell, I don't know. I don't think so. But every day we have to strive to ensure that everybody gets a right to vote.
Can I step in?
Yeah, go, Tracy.
When you were saying, you know, about one person, one vote and all this, here's the thing about people being engaged. When you are not giving me things that I want to get excited about, as a person of color, as a woman, as a formerly incarcerated person, as a person, a member of the LGBTQ community, when you're not talking about stuff that's going to affect me directly, as a person who is buried in the muck and the mire of student loan debt, when you're not addressing anything that's going to direct me, I'm going to go vote. I mean, I'm not, you know. But in general, when you're not talking to the, you know, like for you, Bob, not one mention of what's happening to to your part of the country. You know, not what's happening in just in black communities in general, police brutality, mass incarceration of young black men. Well, you know, we get all the talk about the opiate crisis, but we don't talk about what led up to all these black young, you know, these black people thrown in jail for, you know, for crack cocaine and weed and all that other bullshit. You're not talking about how telling trans, so you know, military personnel that they are no longer wanted in the military. You're not talking about you know, if you don't talk about what he's got, you know, don't talk about him. Talk about what he's, you know, what you're going to do in spite of him. Talk about what you're going to do to make this place better. Talk about what you're going to do about student loan debt. Talk about what you're going to do about climate change. Talk about what you're going to do about the criminalization of black and brown people. Talk about what you're going to do about the concentration camps that you are putting children in. That's what I want to hear about, because if you talk about what you're going to, Don't tell me what you won't do. Tell me what you can do. Tell me what you can do, and tell me how you're gonna change this country. And I damn fucking tease you.
No worries. I'm just.
People are going to. I mean, how many people came out and voted for Barack Obama? Because he had. I mean, he didn't do everything that he said he was gonna do. People were excited. People thought that there was gonna be a change, and that, you know, and the change didn't happen. But he got people excited. He got people excited about the possibility of a change. No, I mean, I didn't get excited about Hillary Clinton about a possibility of a change, because she wasn't talking about a possibility of a change. She was talking about the status quo.
Obama set the bar at 70 million. That's the bar. That really is the bar. And we need the bar to be way higher.
That's what I'm saying. We need the bar to be high. But then again, we can't expect people to be perfect. There is no such thing as the perfect candidate. We cannot fall into that trap that we fell into 2016, where the people's the stay-at-home itis motherfuckers. No, we cannot do that. Our country and our very lives are at stake. But we have to get these people to realize that there are more important. I mean, yes, we need to take Donald Trump out, but we need to step away from what about talking about taking him down and talk about what we can do to revive this country. Because, like Bob said, if we didn't do something about and get this country back, if we get another 4 years of this man or Republican rule in general, I don't think we can come back from this.
We are, Tracy. We are already, as I said a couple of nights ago, we are already changed by this.
We will not undo
some of the bad that has been done. And I think we have to take that into consideration.
I thought it was bad with Bush, but at least, you know, there was a breath of fresh air. But this shit, we are under a cloud of constant hate. I'm going to be 53 fucking years old next month. And I mean, that's a pretty good span. I mean, so, you know, I came a pretty much of age in the late 70s, early 80s. I don't remember how bad, you know, I had shit thrown at me when I was bust in the late 70s. I don't remember it being this bad. And I'm black, and I'm a woman, so fuck, I know bad. Okay? I've been to fucking jail. Okay? I've been to the fucking Twin Towers. I know bad. I grew up in the crack wars of the 80s. I've survived drive-by shootings. I've survived my house being fire fucking bombed, okay? I know fucking bad. Damn it, I know bad. But goddamn, but I recovered from that shit. But I don't know, Bob. Like you said, I don't know. I can't imagine. I don't even think that my grandparents and all that who survived during the civil rights, you know, movement and got, you know, hosed down by fire hoses and gone after by dogs. I don't even think they can imagine that it was going to get this bad, because we're going fucking backwards.
No question.
Can I bring up a lighter subject?
Sure.
Yeah.
Did anybody watch the World Cup today?
saw the highlight reel.
First of all, how then you know,
then you know Megan Rapinoe broke a record in the World Cup. She scored 2 goals in back-to-back games to help win the games. You know who Megan Rapinoe is?
Oh, yeah, she's the one who said she wasn't going to the fucking White House. Good for her.
She comes from my neck of the woods up here.
Yeah. Oh, is she local to Northern California?
Ready.
Yeah, I helped wire the Hypers High School that she graduated from.
She's a big fucking Trump person.
In Palisito, California.
I'm proud of her speaking her mind.
Nice to hear from you, Duncan. Man, I've been wondering where you've been all night.
She's a star ever since she's in high school.
Yeah, I know, man. She's awesome.
I love her.
Yeah, she said.
Oh, yeah. They just need to go on, take care of England, and then wipe them, and then hopefully they win the finals, and
then she can tell us.
Well, yeah, and look, I'm
freaking nuts.
I'm at this point in time.
For making it.
I'm up for her going to the White House and telling him off.
that would be acceptable too, Bob.
I mean, it's kind of like something that I've been saying for a little while. I hate this verbal tic that the Tangerine Tiberius has, where when he wants to when he doesn't like the question being asked, he says, "Excuse me, excuse me, excuse me." Yeah. And I'm thinking after last night, maybe Kamala Harris has what it takes to look at him and say, "You keep saying excuse me. What did you fart?"
Yeah, I could hear it. I could see it. Yeah, she wouldn't let that shit happen. That's what I mean.
I know that all the smart money and the multimillionaires of the for-profit media will say, "Well, you know, she's certainly going to be president." No, you know what? It's time to. He wasn't presidential in the primaries or in the debates with Hillary. It's time for somebody to go in and remember that he comes from professional wrestling. Okay?
Well, what do you guys think of this?
You really think he's going to debate, Bob?
Oh, yeah.
He has to, or the maggots
will think he's a sissy.
His numbers will be underwater, too. He'll have to.
Has anybody seen,
I know the first night was like 15.3 million viewership. Anybody see the numbers yet for the second debate?
No, I haven't.
I haven't.
How many people here have seen the investigation in 10X?
Oh, that was great. That was great.
Outstanding. As a matter of fact, I've been telling on my show, I've been preaching that everybody should go watch that. It's plain and simple. It's written.
I didn't know about that until I saw it like 15 minutes before it began. Philip Proctor on my Facebook posted the link, and I watched it, listened to it. God, that was good.
That was excellent. On Sunday night, I don't want to plug my show, Bob, but on Sunday night on the Family Blue Dot meeting on my show, I am going to play the investigation in 10X. And, of course, it's 10X, so we can actually pause it and have a little discussion between the acts if we wish. But I think it's important that everybody to go see that because it's right from the Mueller report. It tells you the 10 acts of obstruction of justice, and it delves into, there was a little bit of collusion. And it also
a little bit.
There's a whole lot of it. And it also points to Congress again, the responsibility they have to take this matter up, baby.
By the way, we added today a new name to the growing list of people calling for impeachment. Joe Kennedy III jumped on board.
Are we at what 75? Yeah. What?
We're at
74 the other day.
We're moving toward 80.
That's, yeah. Every day it picks.
And I've got a note here from Lady B, going back to the primary discussion. What you were saying earlier about certain states determining who the most viable Democratic candidate will be and how shitty it was, some folks get nostalgic and say it's about tradition. Tradition, my ass. All of the shit stems from colonial days. We don't drive horses and buggies anymore, yet we still conduct our elections like our Senate is full of men wearing powdered wigs. We're global now. Blacks can vote, even though they still fuck with the voting machines in those districts. We have color TVs, refrigerators, and cell phones, yet we still let rich white folks in states like New Hampshire and Iowa determine our front runners. And then we turn it over to the South and let the gerrymandering begin. Darling, if that isn't the most racist, elitist thing you've ever heard of, then I don't know what to tell you. And then I guess this is to me. Enjoy your beautiful state while it lasts, Bob. Right now we're letting folks who shout roll coal and think a day at Walmart is akin to going to the amusement park for free make all our political choices because somehow their votes matter more than others. And we wonder why nothing changes. Hell of a lot of truth in that. Just one thing. Speaking of enjoying West Virginia while it lasts, I don't often ask for help on social media, but for those of you who tweet, if you'll run over to my Twitter feed, please, I retweeted a tweet from Coal River Mountain Watch, because there's an article out in Newsweek that was authored by a woman named Lindsay Allen, who is the executive director of Rainforest Action Network. I respect her. RAN has been a tremendous help along the way in the struggle against mountaintop removal. But every now and then, one of these allies of ours will say something that is just patently wrong and, in fact, damaging. And so the tenor of the overall Newsweek article, and there's a link to it in the Coal River Mountain Watch tweet, is that climate is becoming a bigger issue for Democratic voters because there were 7 full minutes of climate change mentions in the pageants. But the problem is in a paragraph in the middle of the article in which Ms. Allen writes, the politicians are not leading, they are following. And she's being complimentary. So I'm not being an asshole about this. I'm trying to correct the record. The politicians are not leading, they're following. From the broad coalition of indigenous water protectors, local activists, independent farmers, and landowners who fought the Keystone XL pipeline, to the heroes in Appalachia that put a stop to the worst mountaintop removal coal mining, to the blah, 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 blah. Well, that's not helping. In that phrase, she creates the idea that somehow or another mountaintop removal is over. And I can guarantee you, it is not. So what Coal River Mountain Watch said and what I retweeted is to point out that that is untrue and that we need our allies not to say untrue things because we are still fighting for our lives here in Appalachia. So if you're on Twitter, if you would be so kind as to go and either retweet Coal River Mountain Watch's tweet, follow Coal River Mountain Watch on Twitter, or retweet my retweet. I don't care how it happens, but that message needs to get amplified so that maybe they'll notice it and recognize that they have made a grave mistake. So that's, you know, I don't do that very often, but this is one of those occasions where I will. And I don't know how long it takes to pop up on the head-on.live page because some of my tweets show up there. But at any rate, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter and at Coal River MTN on Twitter as well. And if you would help in that way, I would sincerely appreciate it, as would everyone who's working to end something that is not anywhere near being over by a long shot. And statements like that, among other things, undermine our ongoing efforts to end it via things like the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. So it's just a simple request, and I apologize for breaking up the flow of the conversation for that, but we're running short of time, and I wanted to make sure that got out there. Sparky, you were saying something, buddy? Hello?
Hey, Bob, I want to say something really quick.
I don't think I said anything. I was busy doing, putting bleep powder on Grady.
Oh, okay. I thought you were
going to... things.
But I have some news about impeachment that people will like to know.
Cows are better.
Go ahead, Steve.
I'm not going to say which congressperson it is, but in my one of my Democratic club that I'm a member of here in New York, we had the chief of staff from one of the senior members of the Democratic leadership in the House. In fact, this person is chairman of one of the most important committees in the House, and we had a discussion about impeachment, and this person said that it's only a matter of time. So I just thought I would throw that out there as some bona fide inside information about where the impeachment is actually
I would
going.
Agree with him. It is just a matter of time.
It's all going to come down to Mueller's testimony. And then
what I'm just saying his boss, who's a very high-up congressman, said that it's only a matter of time.
There July, you go. Well, July we appreciate 17th. That information.
Hey, maybe somebody watched Robert Jordan...
Oh, Tracy, thank you so much. I want to say thank you so much because I think I sent you a message on Facebook about her being on Mount Rushmore.
I mean,
oh my God!
Well, because I
got chills.
I couldn't. I had to go because my phone died on me the other day when Bob and I were talking about it. Oh. But I mean, like I said, everybody who got to listen to that, you know, who was listening to the show that evening or who listened to the podcast later on or whoever, they need, you know, like I said, what did I say, Bob, about Nancy Pelosi? Oh, my God, I got the Vegas girl. I don't know what to do about Trump. It's like,
watch that, sister girl, watch that shit. Watch that.
And it's like, because like you said, Bob, it's point by point by point. And everything that Trump has done, like you said, as soon as he put his hands on the Bible, he was in, you know, high crimes and misdemeanors.
And monuments. Yep.
You know, just some chop street. Come chop street. He was pulling shit when he was running for office.
Yeah.
And he was still a private fucking citizen. Putin. So it's like, dude, seriously, what more does a motherfucker have to do? I mean, aside from walk up to the Statue of Liberty and shit on her face.
Well, that's been happening anyway, Tracy. Obviously,
I know.
With the border
stuff. I mean,
quite the climb.
I'm not talking metaphorically. I'm talking about physically. Walk up, climb up, get, you know, and climb up and shit on old girl. I mean, come the hell on.
Well, apparently,
keep
Trump
that
true.
Passion, baby. Keep that anger going, too. Keep that
apparently,
alive.
Tracy.
Tracy, you know what? That obviously was a trick Bible with like blank pages or gibberish written on it. Because otherwise, it would have burst into flames.
It would have burst into flames.
Cover on it. It was.
And the light, from that fire, we will see into the next generation. Let me say this about that. We carry the torch of a new generation.
Ask
Bob, I have a. I gotta register my amazement that while talking about the gerrymandering deal, we did not get to the part about the census because that was orchestrated as a 1-2 punch.
Yes.
And I don't believe we've heard the last of the census business.
No,
they're going to try to come back and push it through again.
Yep, they will.
Donnie's already trying to withhold the
printing. John, that tweet. Can we delay the census?
Delay the census here. It's my order. I'm the king.
Yep.
Oh, but it was something we haven't touched on. It was a little bit of breaking news that happened during the program here. From the Department of Jesus Christ, isn't this pathetic?
Oh, I know that department. Go ahead.
While he's over in Japan, he sent out a tweet.
Oh, shit.
After some important meetings, including my meeting with President Xi of China, I will be leaving Japan for South Korea with President Moon. While there, if Chairman Kim of North Korea sees this, I would meet him at the border DMZ just to shake his hand and say hello, !!!
Oh, fuck me.
Are you shitting me?
I mean, Christ almighty, can we just give him a goddamn boombox, let him put it on his shoulder, and stand underneath Kim's window with it?
That's, he might as well. Why don't he take a freaking ring with him?
Play down to one Gabriel fucking songs. Knee.
I can't quit you. I can't quit you.
I promise y'all, I'll tongue lick your asshole. Jesus.
And, well, there goes dinner in the mountain time zone.
That's just pissing. Somebody get the goddamn shiny honey out, because that shit's getting deep up in there. You know, it's a disgrace. And after his little display over there today at Osaka, when he's standing there smiling and telling people, don't mess with the election now. Like it's a freaking joke to this man.
Yeah, nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
That was disgusting.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. It's freaking treason, and we ought to call it that. That's all that man is. He's sucking the ass of Putin, and I'm tired of it. I want the impeachment inquiry going. I want something done. I want tar and feathers, baby. That's what I want.
I need to correct John on the technical term for sucking ass. It's called rimming. Hello?
Rimming? I'm sorry. Catch me up with the frick. I got to stay current here, I'm telling you. But that's what it is, man. I'm just...
What happened to salad tossing?
Oh, shit, yeah. I thought that's what that was. Toss your salad or something. I watched that show. I said, no.
Hey, Bob, talk about going into the gutter or off the rails. I mean...
Yeah, let's go.
We
feel at home.
We were doing so good there for a while.
We're
on time now. We got to squeeze it in. We're running out of time.
Squeeze it in.
Squeeze it in.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Well, there you are. There you are, tap dancing with the goddess of irony.
There's a cowbell there.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah.
All right. That's. Just soak overboard there. We got
a tabernacle choir.
Well, Bob, one of the deals that I do is the TV viewing tip and reviews and different things. I was wholly dissatisfied with the two pageants on Wednesday and Thursday night as a viewer. The format, well, first of all, there were too many goddamn people on the stage and too many goddamn not commentators, but so-called moderators. So there's that. But they got so hung up on the fucking formatics. Chuck Todd, they need to send him wherever they send David Gregory. Okay? Jesus.
I'm trying to take a hit here, Scott. Come on.
Well,
too many commercials, too.
We would have been so much better served to, first of all, fuck the podiums. Get rid of the podiums. Put beanbag chairs in a semicircle on the stage. Give them all a couple of hits from the bong before we start. And have it be a conversation with the moderator or facilitator tossing out just topics. And let the candidates talk where they're coming from. And the viewer would have been so much more well-served. But instead, it was a fucking carnival.
Well,
Jesus.
With that many people, though, how is it not a carnival? Though? That's the difficulty, you know?
Let the League of Women Voters do it. I mean, they did it perfectly, you know?
They usually do a great job. I mean, there are too many fucking commentators. I mean, keep it to two, let's say. A man and a woman.
Yeah, but remember, they're stars, man. They got to, they're not just journalists. They're stars. And that's what I was saying earlier about it being like a pageant. I mean, even with the camera work, you know, there's a tight shot of the stage, and then the camera pulls back and shows the crowd, and they roll the music, and then the camera two comes over to Chuck Todd, who says, "And next we'll go to the lightning round right after this from our sponsors." And I thought,
and you didn't see any of that stuff in 1960 with Nixon Kennedy, or in 76 with Ford Carter, or fuck, even in 80 with Reagan Carter, or in 84, the one that I covered in Kansas City, with Mondale Reagan. Well, then again, for a number of those, it was all, like you said, the League of Women Voters. I've still got the stationery, the notepad that they gave all of the working reporters from that event. And it has gotten so stupid. And the viewers are not being served at all with this.
Hey, speaking of stupid, what was that question that what's his name asked Kamala Harris about hating white alt debate?
Yeah, that was Chris Matthews.
Chris Matthews.
The primary debates. The presidential debates are always run by somebody other than a network.
Yeah, it used to be that they'd be available on every network. But
they are.
Yeah, these things are just profit vehicles. That's all they are.
Hell, soon, Bob, they're going to be pay-per-view. I mean, Mark.
Nobody's going to convince me that the Thursday night lineup of candidates was the result of a random draw. Because Thursday night is the big ratings night in television. And you'll never convince me that you had all the main candidates, I put main in quotes, all the main candidates conveniently all got picked for the Thursday night show.
Except for Elizabeth Warren.
Scott, commercials were $100,000 a minute to advertise on that thing.
And by the way, in answer to a previous question, Bill in Allentown looked it up. The last night's numbers were 18.1 million people.
So that's about 3 million more than Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jack also pointed that out. And by the way, it didn't end last night with the horrible exchange. Like I said, they had already planned for Joe Biden to be in Chicago today to talk to Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition. And it yielded, and it just feels like it's going to be, it's just going to be months and months and months of this. It yielded this little nugget. We ready?
We got to recognize that kid wearing a hoodie may very well be the next poet laureate and not a gangbanger. Ladies and gentlemen, there are too many black men, and I might add women, in prison.
You put them there.
Yeah.
No, really. We have to recognize that kid wearing a hoodie may very well be the next poet laureate and not a gangbanger.
Holy shit.
Oh, my God.
Does he listen to... Who's running his campaign?
I don't know, but the African-American mayor of Atlanta has signed on and endorsed him. Cory Booker grabbed that one in a hurry and said, this isn't about a hoodie. It's about a culture that sees a problem with a kid wearing a hoodie in the first place.
Here's the thing. It's like, again, when I have to have a talk, when I have to decide what my son can wear, he's a grown man now. But the fact of the matter that if he wears he doesn't wear hoodies because he could be killed just for wearing a hoodie. Just the fact that he could be killed for just walking down the street. I mean, there's no rhyme or reason to this. And it doesn't matter about the hoodie. It's because we live in a country where police are not held accountable for shooting young men in hoodies, or white people in general are not held in accountable for doing these things, because it's like, what happened to George Zimmerman? Not a fucking thing. What happens to the cops? Not a fucking thing. Yep. And until something happens to these people, it'll keep happening. Until they are thrown in jail, until when they get caught, when it happens, no administrative leave with pay, no paid vacation. You're okay, so you don't work. You get a leave, but it's a leave without pay. And you get fucking charged. Period. In a sense, you shoot a man who is walking away from you 12 times in the back, and you try to say you were afraid for your life. That shit don't play. How are you afraid for your life? He was running away. What? Okay, I'm done. It doesn't have Chris Matthews asking Kamala Harris. Well, why don't you hate all? How can you not hate all white people? And what she should have said is, I don't know. I should, don't, shouldn't I?
Oh, by the way, the assault on, and you know, you can always gauge the effectiveness on someone on our side by the rapidity and persistence of attacks against that person. Kamala Harris scared the shit out of the maggots last night.
Uh-oh, what happened?
So, Beavis tweeted this.
Which one is Beavis?
Donald Jr. is Beavis. Eric is Butthead. Okay.
Because I don't know, so thank you.
Don Jr. is older. Eric is younger. So Beavis comes first. That's Don Jr. Butthead comes second. That's Eric.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. Okay.
So this curious little series of accounts, all of which began with a guy who called it, who said his first name is Ali, A-L-I, immediately tweeted out the same thing. And what he tweeted and Beavis retweeted was, Kamala Harris is not an American black. She is half Indian and half Jamaican. And of course, this is coming from someone who purports to also be black. Kamala Harris is not an American black. She is half Indian and half Jamaican. I'm so sick of people robbing American blacks like myself of our history. It's disgusting. The same thing was tweeted by like four or six separate accounts. Maybe even more. And then, remember Katrina Pearson, the woman who wore the bullet necklace? She said, Kamala Harris is going to get a stern talking to after the debate. Can't play the race card without going all the way. Obama did choose Biden and no one yelled foul. Obama is actually African American. Kamala Harris is not. Who is best to speak for the AA community? Hint, not Katrina Pearson and not a bunch of damn troll farm bot accounts. But what was that like? She's half Indian and half Jamaican? What is it? Did I miss something? Is Jamaica the island of the extremely dark white people?
Knock knock.
Yeah, no. The bots and the trolls are already hard at work, as if we didn't know that. But I gotta get. It's time to get out of here. If y'all want to carry on the conversation, of course, you're welcome to. Thanks to all of you for jumping in. It was a rousing conversation this evening. I really appreciate it. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you very, very kindly. Thanks to each and every one of you who participate in the program in whatever manner you choose so to do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thanks to Sparky for moderating the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable discussion. Thanks very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.